We're going to call the meeting of the Committee of the Whole together this evening, and I'm going to ask that the clerk call the roll.
Ammons. Anderson.
Here.
Beckett.
Here.
Denzel.
Here.
Berkson.
Here.
Beck.
Here.
Carter. Cowart. Dennett.
Here.
Gladney.
Here.
James.
Here.
Jay.
Here.
Jones.
Here.
Knott.
Here.
Kurtz.
Here.
Langenheim.
Here.
McGinty.
Here.
Michael.
Here.
Mosier.
Here.
Nudo.
Here.
O'Connor.
Here.
Richards.
Here.
Rosales.
Here.
Sapp.
Here.
Schrader.
Here.
Weibel. Wysocki.
Here.
We do have the presence of a quorum in order to conduct business. I would entertain a motion to approve the Committee of the Whole minutes of October 12, 2010, the legislative budget hearings for September 7th, and those for September 14th.
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Rosales, seconded by Mr. James. Discussion or additions or corrections? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the same. Motion carries. I would entertain a motion to approve the agenda and the addenda.
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Langenheim, seconded by Mr. Kurtz. Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the same. Motion carries. We have public participation this evening. Jerry Watson.
Good evening. My name is Jerry Watson. I'm here representing the Champaign County Farm Bureau. And our concern tonight with the board is regarding the list of the seven at large for the commission for the mapping redistricting. And our concern with this, when I look at the seven at large people that have been selected, there's only one person there that is outside of the Champaign Urbana city limits in the unincorporated part of the county, and we only have one representative there. And why that is so important to us is the fact that you guys are our board for our government for the county. We don't have a Champaign or Urbana City Council, and we really have to have your support and be able to hear our needs and concerns out there. So that's why it's important to us that we are represented. In this entire process, we are very supportive of the county doing this, and it's something I know it's a huge task to undertake. And as I go across the state to my meetings with other Farm Bureau people, I'm even being approached by other counties as to what's going on with Champaign County in this redistrict. We think this is one of the greatest things going. You guys have the potential to be a model for not only this state. I think there's other states looking at it, and where you are being followed, and this process is being seen throughout the state, and I even think into our nation's capital there's people concerned and watching it. So that's why we feel this process needs to be fair. It needs to be done right the first time. And in the original intent of this process, which we supported from the beginning, the intent was to take political association out of the seven at-large people that were that selected to this commission. And we've noticed that there are several or a few that on the on this list that do have political ties, and that's concerning to us. So our concern is for you guys is that when you vote on this and do your discussion, that you do look at it and hopefully and do it in an open manner to where it's what's fair, and that obviously not only Champaign County is watching this, but you're really being watched throughout the state and even through the country. So we applaud you for doing this, and we want to be able to help, but we also want it to be a fair and equitable commission. So thank you.
Shirley Stillinger.
Hi.
Hi, I'm Shirley Stillinger. I live in Urbana. I'm here tonight on behalf of myself and the Champaign County Chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union. We have a grave concern about the death of the help desk in the courthouse. I know that the county is pinched for money. I think all units of government are. But from my 14 years on this board, I also know that the library fund is restricted. So I don't see how, I don't understand it. Maybe you can explain it. Why cutting this program is going to help the general position of the county. That information has just not gotten out, if there is a good explanation. I don't think there could be any argument about the importance of the work that help desk does. It serves hundreds of people a year. It would seem to me that it takes some pressure off the circuit clerk's office so that they don't have to keep answering questions from people who don't know what they're supposed to do or which forms to fill out. I would also think, and I don't have any figures, but that it would help in court to have people going to the right place and having the right forms to fill out. I hope you will really look at this, and even if you decide to go ahead and kill it, if you could make the information public as to why this money from the library fund is no longer available. Once this is killed, and I know from experience, when a program stops, it's hard to start it up again. So if you could even keep it going long enough for people in the community to try to find some other way to do it. I didn't know this was in peril until just now. So, and I think many people in the community don't. And maybe if we had time, we could organize and get funds or get people to volunteer to do the work. So I hope that you will not cut the help desk out of your budget this year. Thank you.
Barbara Kessel.
Barbara Kessel of Urbana, speaking for the CU Citizens for Peace and Justice, on behalf of the public interest in keeping the Legal Self-Help Center at the courthouse, now scheduled to cease on December 1 for the lack of $12,000. First, may I direct your attention to the map of counties in Illinois with Legal Self-Help Centers in existence and in planning. You will see by the color coding that Champaign County in green is of the greatest vintage, along with Cook, Lake, and DuPage. The blue counties came online in 2006 and 2008, the red ones in 2009 and 10, and the tan ones are in planning to come on soon. For the past 10 years, Illinois Legal Aid Online, Justice Through Technology, have been building a sophisticated, multimedia accessible website on Illinois law that is aimed to provide usable legal information to lower income individuals who must go to court but who have no lawyer to represent them. Someone said to me recently, well, why don't these people consult with their public defenders? Here's why. Statutes define the types of cases where public defenders can be appointed, and 95% of them are criminal cases. Our courts abound in regular civil cases, such as small claims, landlord-tenant, orders of protection, divorce and custody, city court cases such as noise violations, loitering, littering, non-traffic vehicular violations. None of these kinds of cases allow for a court-appointed lawyer, and also involve fines and court costs. When the person cannot pay them or work out a plea deal, they work off their fines in the jail, or lately wearing the ankle bracelet and being visited by deputies in their residences, which means that the county is paying their fines for them. Our Legal Self-Help Center at the courthouse was able to help or serve approximately 2,000 people in this past year. What might those people have done without the self-help center? A tenacious few might have found this help over at the Land of Lincoln Center. Others run around the courthouse asking for answers where there aren't any, as Shirley Stillinger mentioned. Some would end up having multiple hearings where one would have sufficed because they're lacking any information on the procedures and the range of fines and forms to file pertinent to their case. Worst of all, some could easily have done time at our expense instead of working out a deal to stay out of jail or home detention. Now, I realize that the court and the county are strapped for funds and that you don't want to look for $12,000 under the county couch pillows. So then, think creatively and call upon or put together some non-governmental entity to pick up this service. To cut it off is not just inhumane at a time when poverty is increasing among us, but it is penny-wise, pound-foolish. There must be a reason that there are 46 counties in Illinois with these self-help centers, all coming in and none going away except us. I say, if you don't figure this out, this $12,000, we will all spend more of that in dollars and cents and human frustration all around.
George Weissmiller.
My name is George Weissmiller. I'm a retired Champaign City police officer. I am here to talk to you about the Clinton landfill. I'm not an environmentalist. You know, you're going to listen to me talk, and you're going to think, boy, we got another environmentalist going here. I'm not an environmentalist. I'm a retired police officer. My thing is public safety. This is very much a public safety issue. That's how I think of it. The problem is they are very close to final approval on permits to haul the PCBs from the Chicago cleanup down to the Clinton landfill and deposit them there and leave them there permanently, hoping that they will stay put. The reason that that is important to you folks is the Clinton landfill happens to be right directly about 45 feet above the Mahomet Aquifer, where the entirety of Champaign County gets their residential and business drinking water from. The DeWitt County Board has kind of backed themselves into a corner on this thing. They very early, and it was a previous board, signed contracts with Peoria Disposal, and they're now in a position where if they oppose it, they're going to wind up getting the county sued rather seriously. The state's attorney is advising them not to oppose it, and to be honest, I can see his position. I don't agree with him, but I can certainly see his position. You folks and the other counties over the aquifer suffer from no such restraints. You can do pretty much anything you want on this thing. I'm not an expert. I'm not a geologist. I understand we have some in the room, but I'm not one of them. But fortunately, you don't have to be an expert on this. It's real simple. The question is, why does it make better sense to deposit these PCBs on top of an aquifer rather than depositing them someplace else where there's no residential drinking aquifer underneath them? The residents of DeWitt County, who the board is supposed to represent, we have had two referendums over the years on this issue. Both of the referendums, by about a 75% margin, opposed this. The residents of the DeWitt County are very definitely opposed to this. Most of the board members, if you get them in private, are very much opposed to it. But they can't do it officially. The EPA, I don't know if any of you have ever had any dealings with the federal EPA. You know, BP, one of the things that they're finding out was the problem down in the Gulf is that they were just too, the federal authorities were just way too chummy with these business folks. I went to a meeting that the EPA held about this issue several years ago. Peoria Disposal, the folks who want to haul this stuff in, they had reserved seats. Our seats, the opposition, we were catch as catch can. The EPA routinely referred to Peoria Disposal and the EPA as we. these folks are very chummy with each other. The protection that they're talking about, and there is going to be protection between these PCBs and the aquifer. It's going to consist of 3 feet of stuff they're hauling in. It's compacted clay. The EPA consistently refers to it as kitty litter. Two, literally, sheets of plastic, and not very heavy plastic. And about 40 feet of what they refer to routinely as clay, but if you call them on it, they will admit they don't really know what's there. They don't know how much sand, how much gravel, how many voids are in this. They've done some tests on individual little areas and found it to be mostly clay. That's your protection. The testing. The testing for the, I'm a retired cop. This just screamed at me. The testing that they're doing on this consists of Peoria Disposal, the company that could stand to make millions, literally millions and millions of dollars off of this thing if it goes through, and lose millions and millions of dollars if it goes bad. They are going to draw samples. They are going to submit them unsupervised to the EPA, and then the EPA will test whatever water comes in those bottles and won't have any idea really where it came from. That is the testing regime. I don't think you have to be a retired cop to see that this is just fundamentally flawed. It's bad stuff. The Illinois EPA obviously had to approve this, too. I went to a hearing that the Illinois EPA had. I was talking to one of the geologists. The Illinois EPA has already approved it. I was talking to one of the geologists with the Illinois EPA. She said that she thought it was a terrible idea, that it was potentially disastrous, but they'd gone right down the list and complied with every one of the regulations. Again, just like in the Gulf. No problem, except it doesn't make any sense to do it that way. She's the one that gave us one of the better tools that we're using for fighting this. She actually came out and gave it to us. I also talked to another gentleman who's a geologist with the Illinois EPA, and I said, well, is the Illinois EPA going to do any testing on this stuff? And he said, oh, yeah, there'll be routine testing, and we're not going to depend on them. We're going to collect our own samples. So being a cop, I'm kind of suspicious. I said, so what, about once a year or so you're going to? Oh, no, we won't get to it that often. We have limited resources. And I said, so once every 10 years? Oh, no, we won't get to it that often. We have limited resources. So there's basically going to be no testing done at the state level. The EPA is very, very careful not to deny that these PCBs are coming from the Chicago cleanup. Now, I assume you all know about governmental organizations. When they're very careful to not to deny something, it generally means that it's true, and it makes sense. They're having a huge cleanup in Chicago of these chemicals, and they're trying to open a new place to dump them downstate. You know, Chicago's doing it to us again, folks, or at least they're trying to. Steve Johnson, EPA geologist who did this hearing that I went to for the federal EPA, he came out in the meeting and said that the PCBs break down naturally over time. Now, we have a report that was done by the county, that was done for the county by a geologist out in California named Dr. Lee, and I've done quite a bit of looking on the internet. PCBs never break down. That was a bald-faced lie. The industry standard is they are there forever. You have to deal with them forever. When they originally talked to the board about this, they told the board there would be no liquid PCBs. Now, obviously, anything that's liquid is going to be more dangerous, harder to contain. And we were assured that there would be no liquid PCBs. One of the things that we noticed when we went to Springfield and looked at the application in Springfield that's now been approved is that there is a provision for liquid PCBs. They weren't being honest with us about that
stuff.
Ms.
Miller?
Yes.
We have a 5-minute rule.
Okay.
At committee meetings, and you've gone over it. I'm pretty liberal.
I'll wrap it up right away quick.
I accept that as a compliment.
This is not your problem. You did not create it. It got created over in DeWitt County. We apologize for that. That, unfortunately, in history is history. It is your problem in that you draw your drinking water from the Mahomet Aquifer. DeWitt County is a small county. Watts, the group that I'm president of, is a very small group. We have extremely limited resources. We need more oomph to get this thing stopped. It is coming down the pike real fast at us this point. We're going to have last hearing with the federal EPA probably in a couple, or we're going to be notified in a couple, 3 weeks, and probably have it within a month or two. So it's coming down the pike very quickly. Thank you very much. I'm sorry I ran over.
David Holt.
Hello, my name is Dave Holt. I'm from Clinton, Illinois. I want to speak about the chemical waste landfill, the PCBs as well. Excuse me. A few might remember me. I was here about 2.5 years ago, and you supported the initiative with a resolution speaking against the permitting of the landfill. That was very influential in the local votes that we had in our county and in getting people on our board, which is about split 7-5. The new board we're not sure of. But that was very instrumental in the area. And Logan County has also thought about it. Macon reserve their comment because they're in the process of permitting an expansion of their own landfill, or not their own, but Veolia's landfill. So I do appreciate your assistance before, and we're asked to, you know, if there's any other assistance, to come back and let you know the timing. And as Mr. Wismiller said, it appears that this is going to be moving forward, perhaps with some initiative with a few of our new board members that will take place on December 1st. At this point, I urge you to review the resolution to see if, as a board, you could still support that and perhaps renew it as a new board. Okay, that might be important, might be very timely. Also, we now have several engineering reports. The reason we're here tonight is we happen to attend a meeting of the Mahomet Valley Water Authority, which is responsible for water management in DeWitt and Payette counties. They've initiated a lawsuit concerning the permitting with the US EPA, and the landfill is fighting them. They first said that, I think Mr. Kurtz passed out a copy of the report. It's very, very informative. You can see, perhaps how an independent engineer might look at the engineering and the application from the landfill that is before the US EPA right now. But relative to that, the landfill is a business. Their first approach was to tell the Water Authority, which is a public body, the voters of the two counties put in, they could not hire an attorney to advise them. Then they said they could not hire an engineer to do a study to advise them. Then they lost that battle, and they said, well, you can do the report, but you can't use it. You can't submit it in any public testimony. You cannot submit it to the US EPA. It's just for your internal use. So that is what we're going up against. And as Mr. Wismiller said, the issue here, today, I'd be hard-pressed to say that you get any water far enough away, over to Clinton, that's going to affect Champaign County. Okay, but this, you must take a 50-100-year horizon, because this material will be here forever. And you need to look at the water studies that your own groups are doing, the Mahomet Consortium is doing, looking at where will you be pulling your water in 50 and 100 years. Because that's what's important, and that's why we are now looking at this point in time, where it looks like this is getting to the final stages of drawing and expanding the interest and involvement with the landfill, both on both sides, both, you might say, upstream in the aquifer and also downstream. So with that, I wish you, might take in consideration with the proper committee to review the reports that Mr. Kurtz passed out. There's other reports that Watch has available, other engineering studies, the one commissioned by the DeWitt County Board, which was highly critical of the studies that the applicant made. And perhaps then you could independently, looking at the interests of your own county, then become involved in the process. Mr. Wismiller mentioned that we don't know the timing. It may be a few weeks, a few months. The EPA told us in no uncertain terms a year and a half ago that we would already have the hearing. Okay, that hearing has been delayed for a year and a half, mainly because of involvement of the Water Authority, of Watch, some efforts by the county board in their study. So the EPA knows that the major issue is the Mahomet Aquifer water and its protection. That's right on their website if you go look at the the U.S. EPA on this issue. That's the number one thing. And I think the more response we get from Central Illinois and up for water users, and the more engineering analysis we do and support and review of those studies we do and have commentary, the better it will be for all. And so I would urge you to look at what you could do to prepare yourselves as a county in case we get a notice tomorrow. We have a hearing in Clinton in 20 days. You know, I hope it's not 20 days. But that's what they're going to do. They've already tried to do that four times, and we didn't even know about it. We found out the last one, we were supposed to have 10-day notice before the ads were going to go in the paper, and it got canceled suddenly. They said, oh, well, we've done this three times before. We've not once heard of the other three plants. So when it happens, we'll probably have maybe 20 days, 25 days notice. And that is to give some kind of technical, you know, testimony or test or resolutions or presentations of official bodies on their positions. So I thank you for your time.
Melody Rosales.
Good evening, everyone. I'm here to talk about the self-help at the county. You know, we have four freedoms, and that has helped us to become a very litigious society. If you've never experienced the court system, either way, you're a lucky person. I don't think that it's just for the poor. I'm middle class, educated, 35 years married, three kids, educated, professional. I mean, did I say that two or three times? And I'm the new poor. If you want help, you know, to answer any question, let me tell you what you have to do. Call up the circuit court. I'm talking from experience here. And they tell you that they can't answer a question. I mean, this is including filling out your name in the right spot where it says name. They're afraid because they can't answer a legal question. You're like, okay, I know this is a legal question. You go to the land of Lincoln. You have to fill out a form. You have to be poor. And it's like, okay, but I just want to ask a quick question. This is just a general question. Give me a website. Can't do that. Okay. So you go over to the women's shelter. They're very nice. Sat down with a woman's advocate. She was very gracious. And she did look over some papers that I was asking her to look over. And she was telling me that even they're cut back, that the courts don't even want them to go with people anymore up into the courts, you know, for whatever reason. They're limited. So you say, okay, where do I go? Here's the self-help. You can walk in there anytime and ask a question, simple questions like, is there a website I can go to? They'll look over your paper. They won't give you legal advice. That's not what you're looking for. They'll make sure that everything is filled out. Check that box. Don't check that box. It is a blessing. It is a blessing because, like Ms. Kessel said, you can go into the courts with your paperwork not done, and it can cost the courts and yourself a ton of money. You can't get any answers unless you hire a lawyer. Many people can't hire a lawyer. You have to pay, I call it guilty till proven innocent. Now, in our Constitution, you're supposed to be innocent till proven guilty. But here in Champaign County, you have to pay to say you're innocent. Crazy. You could be accused of anything, so don't walk around real smug, because one day somebody may say, hey, you looked at me funny. You looked at me funny twice. You looked at me funny three times. You're stalking me. It can happen. And they can take you to court. And you can say, I didn't do this. What are they talking about? Let me write something down. Oh, it cost you $115. I'll have $115. You've got to go to court. What happens to a person who's not articulate? Educated? Not articulate. Court's not a friendly place. Have you ever been in there? It's not a fun place. It makes even the most confident person nervous. So you go in there and you're not able to really say what you have to say. You got it, but you're not sure. Someone else is more articulate, more familiar with the courts, and they have their point. Judge says, well, you know, they made their point, you didn't. They win. It can happen. And then what happens after that? That person who could have been telling the truth, didn't have anybody to ask how the process is run, they go to jail. Or they have to work it off. They have to wear a little embarrassing, you know, ankle bracelet. It's $12,000. We have nothing in Champaign County for anybody to go for free help. In Chicago, plenty of places. What do we have here? You have to go to a lawyer. Please, please. please consider $12,000 to help an entire county be able to handle a problem that they have, may have no other resource to do. Thank you.
There's no further public participation. Public participation is closed. Communications from the membership. Mr. Kurtz.
Thank you. Today I went to the Monticello, to Monticello, attended the Mahomet Valley Water Authority meeting. They were very concerned about the possible pollution of the Mahomet Aquifer by the chemical waste landfill proposed by Clinton Landfill. This landfill is proposed for DeWitt County, directly above the Mahomet Aquifer. This board in 2008 passed a resolution opposing this landfill. I've had a copy placed on each of your desks concerning that resolution. A report today made public by the Mahomet Aquifer Authority, an independent study that states that major concerns are the landfill. I have given each of you a copy, and I want to thank Mr. Wishmiller and Mr. Holt for providing those copies for me today in Monticello. Their organization, Watch, is really concerned with the possible pollution of the aquifer, as we should all be. This is our only clean drinking water. PCBs are known to be carcinogens that can cause all types of cancer and other problems. In attendance at that meeting was also the chair of the Piatt County Board, who passed out this resolution to us. And it states, it is hereby resolved that the County Board of Piatt County, Illinois, does not support the permitting, development, construction, and operation of the chemical waste landfill proposed by the Clinton Landfill Incorporated, which is in DeWitt County, Illinois, signed by Board Chair Sharon Martin. I feel our resolution should be resurrected again and sent to all of our state elected officials as well as our federal elected officials in Congress as well. This needs to be investigated. This study, and I'll just give you the first few lines of this report, it's an 18-page independent study from the KPRG and Associates, an environmental consultant and remediation company, has reviewed the permit application submitted by Clinton Landfill of Peoria, Illinois. KPRG was retained by the Mahomet Valley Water Authority, a public water authority created by Illinois law. We are concerned that the proposed hazardous waste fill may pose a threat to the Mahomet Aquifer, the main source of drinking water from Mahomet Valley. Our hope and intention is to assist you in your evaluation of this permit application. Each of you have a copy of this report. This has been on the desks of many boards for the last couple of years. I was only familiar with it just yesterday when it was reported in the News Gazette concerning this meeting that I attended. As with other things, we sometimes forget how important the future for our children and grandchildren are when it comes to drinking water, the only safe drinking water in our county and in the 15-county area is the Mahomet Aquifer. With us having this possible concern, we need to take some action on getting better investigation and better oversight into a landfill that will possibly pollute our drinking water. So I'm asking this board to send this information and this resolution, as now a number of counties are now coming together with these concerns. Thank you.
Mr. James.
Quick question, Mr. Kirk. He said this report's been out for 2 years. Mine's dated July 26th.
This report came out today.
Okay.
This is the first report of this independent study.
Okay, well, I thought I misheard. Yeah. Thank you for correcting me.
There were reports earlier, but this is a new updated study.
I want to make sure I'm right.
Any further communications from members of the board?
Mr. Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be brief. One quick comment on Mrs. Rosales' comments about the intimidation in the court system. And I think that basically proves why Steve Beckett has the personality he has. But that being said, I have on your desk Brendan McGinty and myself put forward a resolution establishing guidelines for the Champaign County 2011 reapportionment plan on the basis of the 74% to 26% vote by the public to introduce 22 members in 11 districts. This is a draft. It will be reviewed by the state's attorney And we're both willing to hear your tweaking about that. We hope that we would have the policy address this and have conversation on it in December and a vote in December. I would remind everybody that the first map, according to the resolution Mr. Beckett and myself put together, is that April 1st is the first map. So if we delay this into a January vote, you would have the 28th of January, they would have less than 5 weeks or 6 weeks to draw up a map. So it's urgent that we follow the public's request to change to 22 and 11. Thank you very much.
One last time, any further communications from members of the board? Communications closed. Mr. Matt Gladney. Matt, last evening as chair of that committee, and I think he deserves a round of applause for being an excellent job.
Thank you. Tonight, first up on our agenda is a presentation of countywide housing study results from the Regional Planning Commission. Just a little bit of background. Back in August, Chair Weibel was contacted by a representative from the Regional Planning Commission who talked about how the RPC and the Champaign-Urbana and Rantoul Housing Authorities were doing a joint countywide housing study to analyze the housing market for buyers, renters, homelessness, housing affordability, barriers to home ownership, vacancy rates, etc. They hired a research consultant for this, data collection and analysis, and they also were going to hold public input forums, and then they requested that they could come to the committee of the whole meeting on November 9th and make a presentation about their results. I understand they also want to move on from our meeting tonight and go make a presentation to the city council. So that is what has brought us here, and we'll go ahead with the presentation. Do you need me to
move? Can come over and sit there, yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
So I'm going to move out of the way, and please give your attention to our presentation. Thank you.
I'm Darlene Kleppel. I'm the Social Services Director at the Regional Planning Commission, and I'm not going to say a lot this evening. He has explained why we're here, and we want to spend just a few minutes talking with you about the preliminary results of the study that we are engaged in. It's a joint study between all the different jurisdictions that receive community development block funding and the Housing Authority. All of those are HUD-funded organizations and government entities. So with no further ado, I will introduce Brian Higgins and Ron Vogt, and they are representing our consulting firm that's engaged in our study with us.
Hi, good evening, everybody. Thank you for allowing us a few minutes here to share some of the preliminary results from our regional housing study. I'm Brian Higgins. I'm the project director for this endeavor, and this is Rob Vogt. He's a partner and principal in Vogt Center Insights. We are a market research firm based in Columbus, Ohio, and we've been in business for quite a number of years and have literally conducted thousands of market studies, real estate market studies throughout the country, and so we're excited to come here before you today. Just a little bit of background. Very briefly, in April of this year, an RFP was issued from all the member agencies that were referenced a moment ago. We responded to that RFP and were awarded this contract. We began the project in July, and we'll be finishing it up here later this month. I want to go over a couple of very broad concepts. Really, we looked at housing demand and we looked at housing in three segments. For sale, single-family homes, condominiums, and then the rental market. So what we did is surveyed really the entire county to see what were the current activities, what are the different issues and challenges that are going on in the community. And we observed that in Champaign County as a whole, there's currently an inventory of 1,879 single-family homes or buildable lots that have already been platted for, that could shortly be turned into single-family home development. We analyzed the demand for new housing in the community, new single-family for-sale housing in the community, at being 386 units per year. We have a formulaic a way in which we approach this. What we really have here is if you were to build any more homes anywhere in Champaign County, you'd still have a surplus for several years. Now, of course, what you all know is that when the economy picks up and the banks start lending a little more to folks, that's going to happen irrespective of the fact that there is a surplus, but it will be affected, obviously, by the amount of housing stock that's currently on the market. And if you look, though, at we wanted to look because the cities of Urbana and Champaign and Village of Rantoul were also integral partners in this. We extracted their data and said, what about the other parts of the county, some of the smaller communities and villages and townships? And so if you extract those three communities, you can see that there we have an inventory of only 415 single-family homes in buildable lots. It's still, a fairly significant number, but because the demand for those other communities is removed as well, we suggest there's only a demand of about 175 units per year. The inventory, then, you can see is really for, again, if no other homes were built in the immediate future, the inventory absorption period would be much shorter than in looking at the county as a whole, including those other communities. We did a similar analysis for condominium demand. As you know, condominiums are a different kind of market. They may be a for-sale product like a single-family home, but they don't necessarily appeal to everybody. They're sort of unique in certain ways. So we looked again throughout the county holistically and found that there were currently 52 unsold condominiums in Champaign County. And we estimated an annual demand of approximately 104 condominium units. So therefore, the surplus that's currently on the market addresses about a half of the annual demand. Now, there are 228 units that have been planned or proposed. They haven't actually broken ground yet. If they do, there'll once again be a surplus of units. But, I think market forces will dictate when and if those actually occur. Again, extracting those three communities, Champaign, Urbana, and Rantoul, there is no inventory of condominiums. All those condominiums are in those communities. So we still think there's a demand for some condominiums throughout the rest of the community, a demand of 41 units per year. But currently there's no supply to meet that demand. And like I said, the third major segment of the housing market is rental housing. And so we want to look at rental housing. The way we kind of look at this is there are two things that really drive the demand for rental. One is when you see an increase in population. Obviously, people move into a community, new households enter a community, they need housing. Some of them are going to buy homes. Some of them are going to rent. So part of it is addressed in that fashion. And the other is adjusting for older, functionally obsolete housing. Now, what we do is you say, well, what's functionally obsolete housing? There's housing that's 100 years old, that's historic, and it's still very functional, and it's an asset to the community. But for multifamily housing, we find that housing stock that's over 40 years old, or in other words, things built before 1970, tend to be obsolete, and that's reflected really by the demand for it in the marketplace. Newer product has come online. People want different amenities. People want maybe larger units or whatever the things that drive them may be. So as new multifamily housing has been built over the years, some of the older properties see a decline in occupancy, and then they'll reach a point where they may no longer cash flow or whatever. They at least are candidates potentially to be replaced. So what we have here is a chart. The way we think about rental housing demand is that we break it really down by household income. So if you make less than $20,000 a year, if you make between $20,000 and $50,000 a year, if you make over $50,000 a year. And again, this is Champaign County, inclusive of all the different municipalities. We have calculated an annual demand of what we have here in the top, or the middle row, I guess it really is the units needed annually between the 2010 and 2015. And the lower numbers are really just a five-year aggregate of that. That's why there's decimal points, obviously. No one's building 9.6 units. But when we figured this out on a five-year basis, and then just, I thought it would be helpful to see what that broke out to in an annual basis as well. So over 5 years, we suggest that there's a need for housing for 68 units for people in this lowest income bracket, 48 units in the middle income bracket, and 563 units for people in the higher income bracket. Now, when we exclude, again, excluding the cities of Urbana-Champaign and the village of Rantoul, we can see a really different set of numbers here. There's actually more demand for housing units for people who are in the lower income band. And then the negative number suggests that there's actually a surplus of units for folks in the medium and higher incomes. And that's really because in Champaign and Urbana, there's a surplus of those units. So it's when you remove them from the mix, you end up with a negative number. And that's it. I was told to be brief, and I hope I managed to do that. But I did want to take a few minutes. I think we have a little bit of time if there are any questions. Again, these are some of our preliminary results, and I know it was brief, but if anyone has any questions, both myself and Rob are here.
When you were calculating demand, be it with the municipalities or without, what's the source of the demand? Are we talking about people who already live in the community and are looking for something better? Or are we really talking about a demand coming from people moving into this county from someplace?
It's actually a combination of both. Obviously, folks that are new to the community won't have housing, and they'll be seeking housing actively. But then also, there are folks in the community who are you know, like you say, they may be looking for a new type of home. They're looking to move up into a different kind of home, or maybe move down based upon how their economics have changed. And those folks, you know, some people are perfectly content to live in a home for 30 years or what have you. Other people like to move around every couple of years. It's just a personal thing. And so, yes, it does reflect how many of those folks in the community we can capture in a new development. Rob, do you have anything you want
to... Okay. That answered it correctly.
Thank you.
Mr. Langenheim?
Could you give us some idea of how you go about estimating need?
Need for the different types of units?
Yeah, for the units.
It's a function of a multitude of things. The existing housing stock, the housing stock that's being developed, growth in the community, change of incomes. It's a multitude of factors that we have. There are a variety of methodologies that are employed by different firms throughout the country, and you know, we've examined them all over the years and feel that our calculations are reflective of this. We can capture this type of growth fairly accurately.
Is it rooted in the statistics for past years?
Yes, sir.
Carol.
I guess I was going to ask a similar question, but my question is more, you're looking at stocks, market, what's being sold, what's being built.
Mm-hmm.
How much of this is captured by the current crisis of housing? Unemployment. I mean, how much does that impact housing?
It's significantly. And that's why you see such a surplus. I think for quite some time, it was like manna from heaven. There was all kinds of housing activity, and people could get loans very easily from banks, and it was very, people did very well developing new housing in the United States, throughout the United States. It's not something that's even localized in Champaign County. We've seen this in communities all over the place. And then around 2007, when the recession really kind of hit full-fledged, and we saw the foreclosure crisis define itself more and sort of a general crunch on lending, we realized that people had overbuilt. And so some of these homes that are sitting vacant out on the fringes of different communities have been vacant for some time. Those platted buildable lots often have been sitting that way for a number of years. So it's very much reflective of the current economic and housing conditions.
Sure.
Are any of your sources utilizing information from, like, the Illinois WorkNet Center, for instance? I'm trying to figure out, if we already have empty plots and houses,
mm-hmm.
why would we have a demand if we have a surplus at the same time? And where does the information actually come from?
It comes from a variety of sources. But to answer your question, you don't always have this demand for the same type of housing where you have a surplus. In other words, if there's a demand for housing for people of low to moderate income, but the surplus homes built in tract developments are $200,000, there's obviously an economic disparity there. But the data comes from a variety of sources. Some of the data is local. You know, we work with all the different municipalities who are partners in this program to access local data. We find that that's obviously very useful. This is ground zero for our study, so we want to know as much as we can from our local partners. And we also use census, both economic and housing projections. That we're at a funny time with the census, as you know. We've conducted it, but the results haven't been released. So we're working with our very logical best guess kind of analysis that has occurred by there are national firms who project this data, and we're very confident in the data. In fact, they even went out of their way to make certain corrections based upon the housing crisis of 2007-2008, so that they backed off what were more optimistic calculations initially. So it is reflective of all those things, and we feel that it gives us a pretty good analysis of where a community can be.
Mr. James?
Well, I guess when I look at this, and when I work for HUD, I know we worked out of the Chicago area, and they would take a count or a census or a study, and they would come up with a figure, let's say, for $600 for a one-bedroom based on an average from the Chicago area on across. But when I look at this, when you're talking about income levels of $20,000, I think what would be helpful for me is to tell me what price range a person making that kind of income could afford. Because I know in Rantoul, and it's been batted around for years now, when the base closed, we took on a lot of housing there.
Mm-hmm.
And Rantoul, I think, Al, correct me, because I know you own half of it, we're up around 60% rental housing there. And we are seeing a need for more affordable, moderate income than we are high range. And I know that there's programs such as Section 8 where a certificate is based on this area that I just spoke about.
Right.
But when I see your numbers, I guess it really doesn't help me because it's market driven, and you know we hear it all the time. Champaign charges so much, so Rantoul wants to catch up to the eight ball and charge just as much, but we don't have the amenities. I mean, these numbers are fine. I know where you're coming from on them, but I really need to see in my mind what we're talking when we say affordable, because as I get older, I don't want to spend over $50 a month, I don't think. But you know, I know it's a tough call, and some of these folks here, you know, when you're talking about housing, I have friends that can afford real nice homes and pay a big mortgage and what have you, but the average working stiff just can't. And so your numbers here, you just give me a guideline on their income, but it doesn't tell me much.
You're right, and I apologize. That's a function of sort of the brevity of this presentation and then, we're trying to touch a lot of things kind of quickly.
And then your numbers, I was sort of wondering about, because I know in Rantoul, I don't know off the top of my head, what do we got, Al? 4,000 some units up there that are rental property or more. So when I look at your numbers and when I talk to some of the landlords up there, I know that there are some with a 30% vacancy rate.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, what Carol was asking, you know, if we're doing it for the area, which I think is great, I would like to see the numbers more concise.
Well, and in the final report will be more specific about the kind of things you're bringing up. And as it reflects upon the village of Rantoul and the cities of Urbana and Champaign, it's very specific because we've drilled down on those communities per the request of the RFP specifically. So,
sure. Mr. Schrader.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to mention, too, Stan, we're going to be having open houses for the public next Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday in Rantoul, Champaign, and Urbana. If you want more information about that, I can give you the times and locations. But this information will be presented and also the results of our focus groups from the actual residents of the county, and then some more statistics that go along with that, which we don't have enough time to talk about tonight.
Thank you. I'll make sure I'll go.
Mr. Schrader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a question about your definition of outside of Champaign, Urbana, and Rantoul. Are you including the villages also out in the county?
Yes, sir.
And you're including also unincorporated areas in
Correct.
The county? Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Webb.
Historical data, how far back did you go in the model?
Really, we're looking at more or less the past 10 years. You know, a lot of our demographic data is derived from projections from the 2000 census. And when it comes to housing, well, I guess it depends how you look at it. We survey for sale housing developments that are 10 years old or less. And, you know, the apartments, we're looking at more of a per unit kind of basis. So there we're looking at any reasonably sized apartment building that's ever been built in Champaign County.
And also one more question. When you said a number of units in metro family houses, is a unit for one family, or are you talking about a unit is a multiple family?
We're actually talking about for the building proper.
Yeah, well, you mentioned the number of units in the rental apartment would be needed. Is that individual family?
Yeah, individual units that can be allocated to a USPS address.
Okay.
Mr. Nuto. Thank you, Mr. Chair. One quick comment about condominiums. We manage four different condominium associations, about 260 units.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll find that the list to sell, there's a dramatic drop-off compared to single-family residential. And I'm not so sure that your demand is taking that into consideration, because I don't think you can build for what some of them are being purchased for. Secondly, the bank lending requirements now for condos have gotten really, really restrictive in terms of review of reserves and making sure that there is no foreclosures in there, because one unit affects the entire association. So I'm not so sure that demand is there.
We'll take a look at that in more detail. Thank you.
Other questions from committee members?
Yes. I guess. I don't know how to put this other than to just sort of be rather blunt, and I apologize for that and maybe my ignorance of some of this, but yeah, I know that. So I'm looking at this task force meeting or whatever, and I don't know what are you wanting to accomplish out of this, maybe, because this is no surprise. This side probably could have had somebody else kind of figure it out.
You know, go ahead.
I mean, I might have missed the boat here. I don't understand.
I'm sorry. The cities and the county develop plans with regard to they're called con plans, and they're required to do various studies on housing and different kinds of needs that the community might have that would be funded by HUD primarily. And so we have not done a comprehensive housing study for some time. So while we might anecdotally know a lot of things, we needed to do sort of a comprehensive overview of that.
Further questions from committee members? Mr. O'Connor.
I just wanted to make sure I understood. You said replacement of housing stock built before 1970, and
correct,
alluded to the fact that 40-year-old merchandise can be considered obsolete. How do you define obsolete?
It's sort of twofold. One is it's a function of, let me start by saying that is there multifamily or apartments that are older than 1970 that lease well? Absolutely. But we need to draw a line somewhere. We have found that in our research, not only here but in other communities, that that's a reasonably good threshold, about 40 years, because new products comes online in the marketplace, and frankly, people often are attracted by the newest, shiniest thing, and so they'll want to move into this new development. Maybe it's near new amenities that weren't there in 1974 or whatever, and so products go through a lifespan that we feel 1970 represents a reasonable time frame.
Yeah, and I think just to follow up on that a little bit, there's a term that we use in the housing business called functional obsolescence, and what we have found is that households desire a certain type of housing, a certain quality of housing, and if it's not available to them, they're going to opt for some other choices. So it's sort of a bit of a nebulous concept, I think, but trying to understand functional obsolescence is important in trying to identify what overall housing demand looks like within an area. Oftentimes we find out that these units are laid out rather inefficiently. A lot of the housing stock that we have here in the county was originally built in the late 60s and 70s, and it was in response to the baby boomers' need for housing at that time. And what we found was that these units tend to have smaller bedrooms, small closets, and if you look around at all the stuff we have today, we need a lot bigger closets. The layouts were rather compact. There wasn't a lot of openness that a lot of households desire today. So those are kind of the issues that we look at when we look at functional obsolescence. The other side of that equation is energy efficiency, that we have so many of these units that were built 30, 40, 50 years ago just aren't energy efficient today, and that's another factor that kind of contributes to that functional obsolescence concept.
So obsolete isn't, in this case, a synonym for shoddy.
That's correct.
Some of my friends that are in the contracting business would be horrified to see
this. No, that's right. In fact, frankly, I live in a 120-year-old house, and believe me, it's a lot better than most of the stuff I see today. But I think the important thing here is that what consumers demand today is a lot different than it was even 10 years ago.
Mr. James.
Just a quick note on CBS Sunday morning show. They were showing a group of individuals now that are living very simply. They're getting rid of everything they can and downsizing, and I'm trying that as we speak.
Further questions from the committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The uniform. Two shirts. No, this is no
matter. I love it.
It couldn't have been.
Doing it on yourself, I find it. Do it all the time.
Okay, next up, I will entertain a motion to accept the monthly reports and place them on file for Animal Control, September 2010, Emergency Management Agency, combined September and October 2010, Head Start, September 2010, Probation and Court Services, September 2010, and the Public Defender for July 2010 and August 2010.
So moved.
Moved by James. Who was that? Yeah, seconded by Jerry. Any discussion? Mr. O'Connor.
Just a comment. I was told that if I needed hard copy on these, that I didn't have to pull them out of the computer, that Kat could handle that for me. Is that, was I told properly?
If you want hard copies and you don't have the capability to print them, you simply need to request it from CAT. That's right.
I'm functionally illiterate on computers, so I will be putting in that request.
Okay. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Next up, we have an approval of a revised intergovernmental agreement for animal should be control services for the city with the city of Champaign. I'll entertain a motion. Moved by Anderson, seconded by Kurtz. Discussion. Okay. Oh, Ms. Anderson, yes.
I looked through this, and I guess I would just like to know what the changes were. Was this in the COTS?
Well, the current contract expired, and this is just a renewal of providing continuing services. Okay. There's a 3% cost adjustment for each year of the contract.
So there really aren't any major changes?
No, it's substantially the same.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Any other business? I have no chair's report. I will say it has been a pleasure serving as your chair of Justice and Social Services the last 3 years. I will miss you all after next week, and thank you for your support. As far as items to be placed on consent, looks like item 7C1 passed unanimously, so that will be on the consent agenda. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good job,
Mr. Beckett. Mr. Beckett has served as chair of facilities for the past 10 years. He has done a yo person's job. It is a tough job. This is a tough board. We have had a lot of projects in the past 10 years. The youth detention center, the courthouse, the nursing home. None of them have been easy. Sometimes tempers flared. There were issues amongst Republicans, Democrats, and sometimes jointly, severally, and sometimes split like the hairs on a cat. But Mr. Beckett has got us through this process. Sometimes a little grouchy, but we were a little grouchy to him sometimes too. It's a tough job. I think that after being chairman of the board, the toughest job on this county board is to be the chair of facilities. He's done a great job, despite the fact that he, and I often disagree, he has done a good job, and I think he deserves a round of applause.
Thank you. First item on the agenda is the courthouse exterior clock and bell tower
renovation project, which is on page 34. I entertain a motion to receive and place that on file. Moved by Langenheim, second by Rosales. I have some comments. I would really like to close this project out with this board, and I've been working with Ms. Busey and Gail White to get it done. As you know, the work is all done, and one of the reasons why I think we should close it out is because this board has the institutional history that's related to this project. And basically what I'll explain, there's only really one outstanding bill. Is that right? The architect's bill. We have an architect's bill of about $20,000. And you can see, we really have, according to our budget, we had $60,000 more to spend. And so I said to Deb, well, why can't we just spend it? Well, it's because this architect's bill relates to the very last change order that we approved. If you'll recall, we had some odd cuts of stone that had to be manufactured, and that delayed us from finishing it in the fall. And then we had the two ribbons that were on the west side and the south side of the building that had to be completely replaced. And of course, then we had the closeout of the project, which requires the architect to review all of the lien waivers and all that sort of thing, and give us our final report on how we take care of the building. So that bill is coming in, but the paperwork isn't done yet. And my understanding is that we may have it by next Monday. I would really like to see us have an agenda item on the board meeting next week, so I would ask unanimous approval to let that happen, because I really would like to try to close this project out with this board. And the only other issue that I think remains, assuming that we get this done, and I may be speaking out of school here, is that we have $1 million left in the courthouse construction fund, because we have been able to complete these projects, not on time necessarily, but at least under budget. And my own thought is that $1 million should be applied towards the bonding that went to financially support these projects. I don't think we should divert that money for any other use. In essence, we approved it using the quarter cent monies for these projects, and we have money left over, and I personally think that should be applied to the bonds. Now, I don't know if that's a finance committee thing, and I don't know if that's something that we can do with this board before we close out, but I just wanted to share my thoughts with you. Questions or comments? Mr. Mosier.
We started this thing 13 years ago, and I'm hoping it comes to a conclusion sooner or later, because I've had a lot of grief over this in my life.
Yeah. Any other questions or comments? All right. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right. Mr. Reinhart, physical plant reports.
I have nothing new to report, nothing new on the reports for this month.
All right, so I entertain a motion to receive the physical plant monthly reports of support. Moved by Mr. J, second by Ms. Ammons. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Recommendation of the full project budget for 202 Art Bartell Construction Project. Of course, we approved the contract at the last board meeting, and the questions were asked about what's going to be the total cost of the project, what other things have to be done regarding that site and on the East Campus. And Mr. Reinhart and Ms. Busey put together a memo on page 40 and 41, which pretty much detail those costs. Is there any discussion about those? Mr. Sapp?
Well, I appreciate your leadership, too, over these years, and I've been able to sit on facilities, but tonight probably won't be one of the, you know, it'll be just like the others, it'll be contentious, because I recall sitting in this meeting that I was handed over from Mr. Nudo because of the conflict, and had discussions about the cost of the building, and this was supposed to be a new concept, that we were going out and we were building this building as a turnkey building, and I remember the discussion because the coroner and the clerk were very much involved, and we asked them for any changes they needed done to the building at that particular point in time, because we wanted to make sure that all the costs were in the building. And then when it came to full board, we brought that up again and we talked about that. there were two outstanding items that I recall that came out of that meeting. We talked about the fiber optic loop, and I had shared with the caucus that there was going to be some additional charges, some additional debt service on this project that were not discussed in the building costs, and that was the fiber optic loop and also the possibility of the storm system having to be finished up. Didn't realize that was going to come in at $450,000, but we can talk about that in a minute. What does concern me, however, though, is some of the items that are listed on here. For example, when the physical plant moves from 302 North Broadway into the new space at 202 Art Bartell Road, they will need to complete installation of specific wiring and associated piping, carpentry, welding. In other words, a maintenance area build out. Now, again, maybe I'm naive when we talked about this, and we were talking about a building that we were going to get that was functional for each one of these areas, the clerk, the coroner, and maintenance, only now to get an additional $30,000 request for a build-out inside of a building that we were building that was going to be complete. And so I guess that would be my first question, if someone can answer, why was this not thought about or included in the meeting that Mr. Reinhart was at, where we talked specifically to the other two departments, do you have any other changes that need to be done?
Certainly. The entire concept of the maintenance area, because of the complexity of all the stuff that we have to sort through and move and set up, was left out of the project scope, strictly because these are things that we could do ourselves in-house for less money than what a contractor would do. Plus the fact that they would have to do an accessible amount of designing to have this stuff fit in that area. This is just funds that was asked for strictly for material, and it is an estimate for us to just move our equipment in, place it in where it needs to go, and just hook it up to the building services. This is not a remodel project or anything close to that. This is just the structure we need to hook up the stuff we have.
Okay. If I may follow up.
Yes.
And I totally respect the fact that we do some things in-house. My only concern is that that stuff needs to be shared with us. We need to know that we are going to get some additional costs. And, again, we talked about it, but the two big items, again, I'll go back to the point, I felt fiber optic was probably on the table. I felt the stormwater was on the table. But I thought we were getting a ready building. So, it disappoints me that that was not in. The other thing is, in the beginning of the paragraph on page 40, the bottom paragraph, historically, during construction projects, we remove specific items, again, I'm assuming because we can do it cheaper in-house, but this was kind of not historical. This was something we wanted to do different, something that we wanted to make sure that we had everything in there that we needed, and there are things in there that a security system, the signage. I mean, we talk about signage separately from all of our other buildings, but if we're going to build a building, it's going to need a sign. Let's include it in this building project. That's what I thought we were approving. Carpeting. And that's an additional $56,000. So now we're up to $86,000, which is something that was very much surprising to me. I can somewhat understand the application and permit fees. We talked a little bit about that. Again, naively enough, I didn't ask the right question then. Thought those were included. But finally, my final comment is up in the four bullets under the very first paragraph where it talks about IGW consulting services of $13,330. I thought, and again, naively, that this building had all of its own architects, all of its own consultants. They would talk to the people that needed to be talked to, and that those prices were included in the building costs of this. And so if you can maybe help me with that a little bit.
That, we already approved that in the not-to-exceed contract with IGW, which is up to $20,000, and we haven't even spent the $20,000.
Okay, so that...
That's all. We've already... That's nothing new. That exists already.
Okay.
That's the $20,000 not to exceed.
I'm surprised that it's included in a cost here.
It's only for your information. It is not included in the total because those four bulleted items have already been or are being paid for out of general corporate.
Okay. Thank you.
Other comments? Mr. James.
Well, I guess following up on Larry, you know, that was some of the same questions we've all had. And when this was outlined, I guess we could have called it soft costs like we do on other projects or whatever. And it's sort of misleading. And that when you, that discussion on that contract, I remember that distinctly. And I think that's something that this board also ought to remember, that we have spent some money doing some studies and some other work. And now we've arrived at this, which is fine. But that money also was put toward getting this going and heading in the direction that it ended up in. I mean, I don't know what the total was. We did a study, and then we did some repairs and what have you. But in my mind, if I'm sitting down doing a budget, that's all the same apple. I mean, because it all went toward the same end. And I know at the last meeting it was distinctly asked, and a turnkey operation to me, and somebody stand up here and yell at me if I'm wrong, but a turnkey operation is they hand you the key, you walk in there, and everything you've asked for is there. All this other stuff should have been outlined, that we were going to have a budget of $100,000 for extra costs such as furniture, lighting, or whatever the case. And I'm all in favor of in-house work. Definitely in favor, because you save a lot of work or cost. But the thing is, we should have had those figures up front. I mean, it's almost like we get, in the old saying, piecemeal information, and then we're asked to make a decision, and then all of a sudden, before we all know it, we're going to be up close to $2 million. Granted, we're saving with the lease. Understandable. And it makes me mad that we had this discussion 2 years ago. We're leaning toward this type of building, but we went off on a tangent because, oh my land, we can save this other building, do all this other work, and that's where I'm going back to that cost, because we did put money into it. We need to set down, and I've said it 100 times, we rush. We get piecemeal information, we rush, and we need to really look at the figures. Whether that take a month, 2 months, or 3 months, that's what we're here to do. It's not like it's got to be built tomorrow. Period.
May I comment, if you don't mind? First of all, at the last meeting, Ms. Busey was asked, why are we still talking about a budget of $2.2 million? And Ms. Busey said, well, that's because we have all of these owner items that we have figured that need to be included in this project. And the board's response was, well, get us that information. Get us the detail of this information about this extra money that you say that we're going to be spending. Folks, here it is. You asked for it. Here it is. This is no surprise. There's not a thing that's in any of these items that isn't in any building project we've ever had. And it's just, it wasn't included in the RFP. You saw the RFP, and this is pure logic, you know? This is, quite frankly, I'm glad I'm leaving. This is going to be your building and your project. Because what we try to do is respond to the information requests that you make, and when we give it to you, then all of a sudden we were keeping secrets. No. Well, we weren't keeping secrets. We gave you the detail. The one that bothers me, Mr. Sapp, is the $447,457. That's the one that bothers me. The rest of them really don't bother me. That one bothers me. Because I didn't think that the drainage problems that we had out here that we took care of with the Scottswood Drainage District would ever be of the magnitude of this. That's the one that bothers me. Thank you. But the others, they sort of make sense to me. But I'll tell you, Ms. Busey predicted the budget for this project, and she's right on. Mr. J. I'm trying to be diplomatic, Mr. Nido.
Mr. Beckett.
Mr. J.
I actually agree with you. I don't understand this $447,000. Can somebody just briefly explain why it is so high?
I talked with Burns Clancy Associates. They have been working on our storm drainage since the conception of the East Campus design years ago. And I contacted them to get their opinion of what the cost would be. And this is the number they provided us.
Yes. As you know, when we did the nursing home, we had this same drainage thing, and it caused us all to pull our hair out. But I thought that we were draining into this pond forever and ever, although we're paying forever and ever. This is not part of that. This is something completely different. Hard hookup for something else.
Well, I think the problem is the East Campus actually has two watersheds, and there actually is a dividing line that is sort of north of the nursing home, and you know, sort of runs at an angle northeast. And at that dividing line, it drains to the north, and the other way, it drains to the south. As I understand it, you'll correct me if I'm wrong. And so So what drains to the south, that's the Scottswood drainage project, you know, that we did several years ago for umpteen, you know, million dollars. What drains to the north, we see what's out there in front of the highway facility. And that's ultimately, I think, the way the stormwater is supposed to go. I knew that there was something that needed to be done, and I think we even talked about it at the meeting, as Mr. Saff has indicated. It's just $450,000. I was thinking at the worst it might be a couple hundred thousand dollars, but $450,000, that boggles my mind.
Is it a hard hookup, though, to get the water off of our property into somebody else, or is it a retention cell with a,
you know that?
Basic concept was that it was 75% hard hookup and another very small retention area out by East Main Street.
No bridges this time.
No bridges that I'm aware of.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Schrader.
Thank you. Mr. Reinhart, on following the same subject line, if we could, please. I assume this is required from our permit for the city of Urbana to have this building site there, water retention, and this is the best way we can go.
At this time, we do not know if this is required by the city of Urbana for the construction of the 202 Art Martel building. It's possible that it may be required, but we do not know that. I was asked to find out what it would cost for us to do it if it is required, and this is that number.
Okay, may I follow up, sir? Is there any way we could acquire some type of grant money to help us with this project like we did the Scottswood hookup out there? Maybe delay this till we can get something?
I don't know. Well, I wanted to respond to something Mr. James said. He acted as if there was no deadline, and he knows that's wrong. The reason why we built this building and why we did the RFP and we moved as fast as we did is because there is a deadline, and you know there's a deadline, and we told you there was a deadline, and one of the reasons we recommended Ressler was because of 177 days and the opportunity to meet that deadline. So don't you look at me and tell me that there's no deadline. Mr. James, and I like you, too.
I like you, but you misunderstood me. I said we always rush because we act like we've got a deadline
when we should take our time before making a decision.
Right.
Well, much like we do when we plan a vacation. This time we were in a rush. You're absolutely correct. Right. Mr. Mosher.
That water's got to go to the saline. Has that drainage district got any involvement in this?
Don't know. Maybe we'll be lucky and we won't have to spend $450,000. I don't know that. Ms. Ammons?
I wanted to ask Ms. Busey. I know we talked about, the last time we talked about the building, we do know there's a deadline, but this kind of changes some of the questions that's being raised because of this actual site storm, the need that needs to be done to address this issue. What does this do to our figures that we initially had on the turnkey? I think I have never, ever been involved in building a commercial turnkey operation whatsoever, nor residential. So this really is a learning curve for me. What I initially thought was what we had as a figure turnkey, they would build a building, it would fine. This is definitely a new area that I'm trying to figure out, and I recall us having a bonding issue discussion about how much money we needed to bond for this, and then how over what length of time it would take for us.
And that's all in your packet in a memo on page 101. And this project had been estimated before we had any hard numbers all along as a $2.2 million project. So it is actually $200,000 under what we have been estimating this project would cost throughout the course of preparing to get to this point where we actually have numbers. I would point out that my understanding is that the East Campus site storm hasn't it been documented as what ultimately we will be required to do, whether we're required to do it with this building or at some point in the future, to meet the full requirements for MPDES and what we have to do?
I believe that is correct, yes.
So it seems like if we know we're going to have to do it sometime and we're doing this construction right now, even if this building permit doesn't require it by the city of Urbana at this point in time, I believe this board should consider going ahead and doing it so that we are finally in full compliance with what we know the regulatory requirements ultimately will be for this property on this east campus. In terms...
When I read this, I didn't quite understand it simply because the initial discussion, again, I'm dealing with my inexperience with a turnkey operation, made me believe that the project itself, this was not in consideration. So you were already considering this project
right.
when you estimated it.
Right. We already knew that in addition to the cost to the contractor to build the building, that there were owner costs that go along with the completion of the development on this east campus. And this was one of those considerations, together with the fiber connectivity and a couple of the other things that we have listed on pages 40 and 41. If you look at page 101, you see that with the construction contract cost of $1,355,000, with these additional site costs, owner costs of $590,717, and including the cost of bond issuance of $47,270, the total issue is $1,992,993. And there's an analysis there of taking it over a 15 or 20 year period in terms of repayment. I'm recommending 15 year because it will save the money. It will save the county money and interest, obviously, over the 15-year term. The estimated cost for the 15-year bonds is $176,000 a year. Right now we're paying $120,000 in a lease for the Gill building that houses the same functions that we will place in this new facility. And in the last year, the county has gone into two new leases which generate new revenue to the county that total $58,000. $40,000 for the Army Corps of Engineer land lease and $18,000 a year for the Access Initiative project. So the combination of what we currently pay in rent and the new revenue from those two leases covers the annual payment for the bond issue at 15 years.
Say something real fast.
Is there a contingency if we have any unexpected event?
We don't have a separate contingent line. We are estimating that these numbers that are being presented to you will be able to make it work within this budget.
102, Deb, just so you know your interest rates.
Yeah, the interest rates are backwards,
yeah,
sorry.
I thought I better point that out.
Yeah, thank you.
Other comments, Mr. Knott?
Just for Mr. Beckett's sake, is this building guaranteed to be mold-free?
Ms. Michaels.
Well, you know how much this storm amount will actually cost. I mean, this is a guesstimate. I understand that. But, I mean, is there something that will tell us, yes, that is what it is, or it's going to be more, or... What? That's a large number. That's 50% of the amount, so I just, it'd be nice to know.
Before the actual total cost could be determined, a contract would have to be negotiated and signed with either BCA or another engineering firm, of course. A design would have to be completed, and then bids would have to be put on the streets and received before we'd know the total actual cost. That is why the estimate is, I believe, so high.
Mr. Bensel.
Could this information have been provided last month when we were given the contract to approve or the $1.3 million, or was it not available at that point?
We were still working on putting together all of this information. We think this is the point at which, you know, we could provide this to you.
And we approved the contract last month because we had a time frame that we had to meet then, is that correct? I heard Mr. Beckett refer.
Yeah, we had an RFP.
Kind of a deadline.
We had an RFP. Remember, if you recall, we designed an RFP.
Right.
We issued the RFP. We had a return date, I think it was October 12th. We examined the responses to the RFP. We met with the stakeholders, the county clerk, Mr. Reinhardt, and the coroner. We determined who we wanted to recommend to the board. The board agreed. We sat down and negotiated that contract, presented to the board that was approved at the very last board meeting.
Yeah.
I understand that. The question is, why didn't we know this information? That's the question.
No, but back to the timing of it. You mentioned to Mr. James the 177 days. Is there something at the end of this that we're trying to meet a deadline there?
Yeah, we're trying to get out of the Gill building.
Is it a lease?
Yeah, we're trying to get out of the Gill building as early as we can and save that rent. It's true.
All right. Well, I guess what I'm asking or suggesting is if detailed information like this could be given more in front of instead of behind. I mean, this is almost 50% of what the building contract was. It's not insignificant dollars, and maybe we're under a deadline this time that simply didn't allow it. But if that kind of information was available and given at the time, we all might have better information to work from, and Mr. Beckett wouldn't have to yell at us then when we ask those questions.
I would say that what's different about this project is that every other project we've done has had numbers like this, owner's items, as we brought the total budget of the project to the board, at the time that we're we go through those phases, schematic design, build, construction phase, etc. And this project's just different. It's just a different way of doing it.
And I agree with and understand that, but I would disagree with your concept of a turnkey building. A turnkey building includes carpeting and wiring and things like that. So, I disagree with that aspect of it.
Well, I guess I would call it modified turnkey because I think it would have been absolutely silly to, when we can have our guys put the carpet in, to include that in the cost of the building. Yeah. Okay. Other comments? Mr. Sapp, I'm sorry, you did raise your hand.
One last question, and just for clarification, I guess, Mr. Reinhardt indicated he spoke with BCA and got this $447,000 figure. Did that estimate then include the process that you just spoke of? The process of having the study done, the process of putting out the RFP and all that, is that included in that?
Yes, sir. That is their estimated cost for design, bidding, and construction.
Thank you.
All right, now this is not an action item, right? The action item actually is...
At this point, we envisioned that the facilities committee would approve that this is part of the project, but for this construction.
All right. Entertain a motion to approve the recommendation of the full project budget for 202 Art Bartel Construction Project. Mr. Nudo.
Yes, thank you. I must abstain because of the relationship I have with the potential developer of the building.
Okay. All right. He didn't move. Rosales moved. Basaki seconded. Mr. Nudo indicates he has to. You can't do that. If you're going to abstain, you have to abstain. So Mr. Rosales moves. Ms. Basaki seconds. Any other discussion? We beat this up, Ms. Michael. You speaking for Mr. James? Oh, you're in the same.
I'm in the same boat as Mr. Nudo. Unfortunately, I agree with these guys. This should have been here before.
Okay.
And turnkey is turnkey.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Just as a clarification, you're not voting on Wrestler's contract with this. You're only voting on the issues on pages 40 and 41. So you would have to state your basis for needing to abstain.
Well, my basis is very simple. It is, if this passes, then I am basically abetting that decision to go forward.
Now, I think you're saying...
That decision's already been made.
I think you're saying included in a project is going to be $590,000 worth of cost. Period. That's all you're saying.
Are we talking about the $590,000 or are we talking about the whole thing?
Talking about the $590,000.
Okay, because if it's the whole thing, I cannot.
Well, I think if we get to the bond issue, I understand why you're abstaining.
All right. Thank you.
Any other? Voice vote okay? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Sure.
I'm going to miss this. Mr. Reinhardt, update on the roof project.
Advanced wing cane and advanced roofing has started. They have already removed and replaced approximately 60 squares of the shingles, and they're moving quite well.
So far, we haven't found any major damage to the structure anywhere. Minor, small areas that we had to remove some small pieces of plywood in the valleys.
Can you speak a little louder, please? It's hard to hear.
I'm sorry.
There are people talking. Thank you.
Okay. I'll start over then. Approximately 60 squares of shingles have been removed and replaced. We have not found any structural damage to any of the decking or building anywhere yet, so it's moving along quite well with this blessing of the good weather we're having.
Any questions, Mr. Reinhardt, about the roofing project? All right. Lease agreement between County of Champaign and the Illinois Attorney General. Entertain a motion to approve.
So moved.
Moved by Eamon, second by James. Discussion. All those, oh, Mr. J.
The what has been in their previous lease agreement and what continues with this lease agreement is that the calculator for the annual increase in rent is the CPI factor that you use for the PTEL calculation. So they are increasing their rent by 2.7% with this lease for next year, and we use that CPI as the indicator of how much their rent will increase from year to year in the term of the lease. There's a 5% maximum cap and a 0% minimum. If the CPI is negative, then their rent stays the same. If the CPI is more than 5%, the rent increases only by 5%.
Mm-hmm. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Lease agreement between County of Champaign and Champaign County Maine Society. Is there a motion to approve?
Moved
by Mr. Kurtz, second by Mr. Richards. Discussion. Mr. James.
Just so everybody's clear, this just is a land lease.
It's true.
There you go. Thank you, Steve.
Mr. Nudo.
And what is the value of the land?
Well, we went over this, and we did. We showed you the calculation, and we did it exactly the same way we did the... we had an appraisal, if you recall.
Okay.
Remember?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's coming back.
All right. And we did. We used the same methodology that we used in doing the armed forces, the U.S., the land lease with the U.S.
Okay.
Remember? And Ms. Busey and I thought it was 500, and we actually got more. Remember? Okay.
Remember?
Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. So for consent, I see C1 and 2. Is that correct? And you don't. The other item is not a agenda item. Well, thank you all. I particularly want to thank the individual members of the Facilities Committee back when we were a Facilities Committee, especially the nursing home. I think the nursing home, I don't know if anybody will agree with me, or maybe they will. That was probably the toughest thing that we've had to tackle in the 10 years that I've been in this position. And it was handled extremely well, very professionally, good criticism, good questions, and somehow we made it through. And I'm as proud of that building as any of the others that we have. I would note that my wife came to the county board meeting tonight for the very first time in the 10 years that I've been here, and she left before facilities, and that was really smart.
You'll come back and visit us every now and then, too.
Yeah.
I know you can't stay away from this place. Policy, personnel, and appointments. Mr. Chair, and the Nursing Home Board of Directors.
You forgot item A.
Yeah, item A.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Which personnel one? Policy.
That's what you're on. The chair of the Nursing Home Board of Directors is not here. This is under policy.
Request approval of the revised nursing home personnel policy.
Mm-hmm.
Moved by Mr. McGinty, seconded by Mr. Mosier. Discussion? Ms. Wysocki?
I have... a few questions to ask, so if I can have the floor to go through them all, I'll try to be brief. A lot of this, I think, is just clarification of meaning, so they should not take long. But I want to begin on page 9. This is item 2-1.6, and I just would like a description or a definition of what a predictive index is.
That is a tool that the nursing home uses to pre-screen applicants who are applying for positions within the facility. It measures skills and personality, and just it's a tool that they use that has been developed to align individuals with the jobs that are available to determine whether or not they match, that it's okay. A good match.
Okay. And then at the top of the next page, page 10, there's a paragraph there that asks that the new employee sign a receipt for the materials presented during orientation meeting. Am I mistaken? Didn't we not once ago ask that they have read these materials, not just that they have received them? Or was that another organization?
But I think the acknowledgement acknowledges that they have read them. The acknowledgement of that they signed.
Is that they read them?
Mr. Weber.
I don't think you can force people to read anything. Give them the opportunity. This book is that's what
but it's if they, but if they if they're asked to sign that they read it, then the responsibility is on them, isn't it?
The drug and alcohol policy, which is in that same paragraph, okay. Is the employee, when they sign the acknowledgement, they acknowledge that they have read and understand the policy. All of the documentation that we hand to new employees at orientation, we do not ask them to document that they've read it all, but we are documenting that they have received it all.
All right. That's probably what I meant. Okay. The next item is on page 26. Item 8-9 deals with 2 hours off if necessary for someone to exercise their right to vote. Does this paragraph take into the fact that we now have early voting?
This is state law that's written into
the
policy.
Even with state law, we still have to make 2 hours available.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the last item, I think. Chapter 13, that deals, this is page 38, that deals with political activities. Activities, by the way, is misspelled. This section seems to say nothing about union activities. Is that somehow addressed in this document?
This document does not really pertain to bargaining unit employees, their labor contracts. This really pertains to non-bargaining employees. And what the nursing home has done here is mirror the personnel policy that the county has for its personnel policy, which was recently reviewed with regard to these issues. So, no, I don't think it does address union activities. But that may be addressed in the bargaining contract for bargaining employees.
So their right to carry pickets or signs?
That's all addressed in the labor contract.
Okay.
Not with this policy.
Okay. And that's all I have.
Further questions? There's a motion on the floor. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the same. Motion carries. Appointments and reappointments. The Redistricting Commission, 7 at-large members, 2 Democratic County Board members, and 2 Republican County Board members. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Best. My nominations are Anthony Ackerman, Terrence Archibald, Augustus Holman, Brenda Harris, Diana Harriet, Esther Pat, Richard Winkle Jr., Ron Benzel, Jonathan Schrader, Alan Kurtz, and Michael Richards.
Is there a second?
Sir.
Second by Mr. Langenthal. Discussion. Mr. Rosales.
Who are the county board members that apply, other than these four?
Mm-hmm. The county board members that applied, Mr. White.
Mr. Rosales also was applied.
Were there any others?
No others. To my knowledge, at least. Yeah, yes, never talked to me. Those are the only ones.
Further discussion? All those in favor say
whoa.
I'm sorry, I didn't see it.
Thank you, Tom. I did have a question relative to what Mr. Watson said in his presentation. Why there is such a conspicuous absence of rural representation on this committee.
There are at least...
Well, listen, I know Ms. Hill lives out in the country. Mr. Shea lives out in the country. Mr. Benzel lives in a small rural town. Mr. Archibald's from Antillo.
Jonathan.
I'm sorry, Mr.
Harry
lives in Sydney. I wouldn't really look at the specifics of whether you live in a rural area or not. It was not required by the rules of the county board or by the resolution.
Yes,
I did have some concern about geographic distribution, but that was sort of a side issue.
Mr. Jay.
My quick tally was that there was three from Champaign, two from Urbana, one from Rantoul, and one from the rural. Isn't that accurate?
I tell you, I've not done that calculation. So you could be correct.
Mr. McGinty?
It may be helpful to the board to hear the rest of the chair's criteria that he considered when considering this list, and if I could ask for just sort of a description, I think that would be helpful.
Sure. I have no really preconceived idea about how to select these members going into the interviews. Well, actually, I had a number of them, but I had like three or four of them. And I really didn't. The process of doing what I should do is eliminate a number of people. I felt that I asked each candidate about 10 questions, and some of the questions, the answers to some of those questions led me to eliminate them. I felt that the answers were incorrect, or in some cases I was looking for some idea that could build up some flexibility, and particularly in questions like what is a compact district, what was the discussion about the size of a compact district and contiguous to. And then I decided that one criteria I looked at that if they were members of any political organization as in a precinct committee person, I decided that they were not really. I looked for independence, and I thought that if they were truly independent, they would not be tied to political parties in that way. And I believe that all the people that I nominated do not have those positions, to the best of my knowledge. I also looked for representation in the African American community, also in the student. I felt that there are a large number of students in this town. I fully recognize that, you know, I did not pick a farmer per se, but I believe that, again, Ms. Harriet is married to some of the ag business, I think. I'm not sure. I noticed that her family is a member of the Farm Bureau. Certainly Mr. Schroeder is, and there are other members on the board, I think the members of the Farm Bureau. I also look for one factor, so was the gender, because we have four county board members male. Obviously, I had to pick a significant number of the private citizens as female. Even then, I think the ratio still is still male dominated. And things just sort of fell into place. So I thought, well, let's try this, and here's the result.
Mr. Rosales?
Did you have an opportunity to look at their voting record in the last 5 years of all of the individuals you selected?
I looked at the voting record was the last thing I did.
Carol?
I just want to say that I believe this committee is really a usurping the responsibility of the elected board members of this board. So that's just for the record. Secondly, the committee lacks diversity. Are there, I don't know, a couple of these members, some of them I do know, the majority I know. Are there any people of color on this board?
I mentioned that one member is Augustus Harmon, is an African-American.
Is he from, has he been in this community for a while?
That is not a criteria. He's a registered voter, which is a criteria. He has a residence in Champaign County.
Mr. Benson.
Well, for one, first, I'm looking forward to serving on this. I think it's going to be very eye-opening for me. Unfortunately, I have a strange vote, and I'm going to vote against this only because we're voting as a block. I had kind of went through the list. I read all of them very closely and looked at them, and I had my own list of people that I thought would be very good, my list of people that I certainly didn't know, but their credentials look good, and then I had my list of people that I just thought absolutely not, and unfortunately, two of my absolutely nots made the recommendations here, so I will be voting no.
Mr. Beckett.
Initially, I thought I would approach it, my review of this, in the same way that it sounds like Mr. Bensel did. And then as I thought through the process, I thought what I would just do is wait and get a reaction to what the names that the chair nominated. And quite frankly, my reaction was positive. I think it's a terribly difficult task to perform. I do think it is something that requires to look at this committee as a whole instead of parsing it by names. I personally might have wanted to have Mr. Rosales on this committee, but I'm not the board chair. Mr. Weibel is, and I think I credit him for taking the matter seriously, for the time that he spent in conducting the interviews, for the thought that he put into it. My grave concern all along has been that we achieve the goal behind this ordinance, which is to give this process, as Jerry Watson said, really a fair shot, to have a group of people who will work together publicly, not behind closed doors, not secret meetings, not caucus reports on bringing that kind of agenda into it. The two people that I had some concern about, actually, and it, I don't mean it. That makes it sound like I was negative, and I'm not on either one of them. Is Ms. Pat and Mr. Winkle, because both of them have a public affiliation with one of the major political parties in our county. But I know both of the individuals, and I think that they would not have applied for, nor would they serve on this group unless they intended to carry forward the function that is behind it and is really the intent of the ordinance. And so rather than be critical, which I think it would be easy to do because of the variables that's in it, I intend to support the board's chair's choices.
Mr. Benzel, follow-up?
Real quick. I find myself in strange territory, but I actually agree with, I think, almost everything Mr. Beckett said there. So, thank you. All I wanted to say was that I did leave off my follow-up to my comments, and that was that I do want to thank the chair for the work he put into this, because I know he interviewed a lot of people and took a lot of time for this, and I do appreciate the work that you put into it.
Mr. Gladney?
Thank you. Well, I was against this creation of this commission, but the board, the majority of the board spoke. So, you know, what do you do once that occurs? I mean, do you sit and stew about it, or do you try and make a go of it? I'm willing to make a go of it. I was sort of like Mr. Beckett. I was kind of in a wait-and-see mode. And I think Chair Weibel did a yeoman's job going through the plethora of applicants. And, you know, it's not perhaps a perfect list, but I don't know if you could get a perfect list from all the qualifications that we were requiring and criteria and everything. There are a couple
you know, people that made the list that surprised me, but okay. I think the selections from the members of the county board are good. I think and I hope everyone on this list will be fair-minded. So as it stands currently with this list, I am willing to, with reservations, I am willing to support it.
Mr. Knott.
Yeah, I know Penn's had a hard time doing this. I likened it to a baseball lineup where you have certain people can play multiple positions, and you're constantly, I assume, you know, tweaking your lineup to finally come up with the batting order, literally. But I think it's a good thing. I think, you know, when Brendan and I threw this out 4 or 5 years ago, it was just a dot on the list of things that, you know, we thought could help the county. We thought this was actually one of the major ones, because this will influence most likely the next 10 years. And I always said what the trump card with this was is that the public, not just the 7 members that are there plus the 4 board members, it's really the public that holds the trump, because they can come to the meetings and exercise public pressure on these folks to do it fairly, to do the maps in such a way that Champaign County will be the leader on this. And I think Jerry Watson, as he indicated, there's people all over the state curious about how this is going to work. And, you know, especially, you know, we're kind of a microcosm of urban and rural and all those other interests that we know of. And I'm going to support it. I think it's would have been the 7 I would have picked. Probably not. But then again, I think all 27 of us would have had 7 different people on the list, because I think there were a lot of great people there to choose from. So I think it's up to the public to hold this group's feet to the fire, and then when they make their final recommendation, to forward that to the board, to then them and the public at large to hold the county board's feet to the fire, and then that will complete the process. And I think we'll be amongst the leaders for a long time, and I hope maybe in the next 10 years other counties will emulate what we've started here.
Mr. Mosier.
You and I have both been through this with 2 gerrymandered maps that came in here at the day, you know, we got to do this, and we knew what was going to happen. But the last 2 maps have been as gerrymandered as anything this county could have produced. And I can't help but think taking this outside the auspices of this board is going to help at least make it palatable to know that maybe we're going to pay attention to a township line or a street without going down the street and messing around with a number because somebody lives there we didn't want, and that's happened. And I hope this will be at least a fair map after it's done. I don't agree with all the people that are on here, but I'm ready to accept what Chair Weibel's done. I think he's tried to be fair with this, and hope we'll get a product that doesn't look like the last 2 did.
Barbara?
Well, I'm going to echo a lot of what's been said, but we are in uncharted waters with this. And in a way, it's very exciting. I'm sure, everybody, each one of us could have had a different list of 7. I think we each have sort of a shades of nonpartisanship or how partisan we would like to see the membership on this committee. But I think there is a tremendous pressure, burden, put on this committee right from the get-go in terms of not only having to produce or at least move the county toward the production of a map that will last us for 10 years, but also to make this process as transparent as possible, which, given the nature of their task, is certainly a big step. And so I'm trusting that everybody on here understands what the charge is going to do everything in their ability to proceed with a lot of both personal integrity as well as group integrity in working toward the goal that the resolution assigns to this. So I'm very excited, and I'm really anxious to see how this works out.
Brendan, then Ralph.
A couple of other things to add. As I understand it, I agree with Barbara that not only how this is formed, but what this group does is extremely important. We heard earlier from Jerry about how we, as I understand it, we may be the first in the country trying to do this. And so the thoughtfulness that goes into how this works could well be a model, and it's very, very important to take the steps carefully. I'm going to support this lineup that the chair has put forward. I don't think there's any one of us that, if we were given the ability to draw a list, would come up with the exact same one that he did. But that's okay. What I'm looking for are worthy adversaries. Folks, if they're going to have political affiliation, and I'm not thrilled about that, I would have preferred to keep it completely non-political, but I do think that it's important to have some people on there with some experience at doing this. It's not only the job of the other members to take into question how best to do this, but it's also our job and the community's job to watchdog how this takes place, to raise the questions, to challenge this group. This was a hell of a job to put together. These were the list of people who applied, and it is a good group of diverse people. Those in question, probably most in question, I think will essentially offset each other with views from opposing parties, like Al and Michael, sort of versus, if you will, Ron and John. That's fine. I think that will create the type of discussion that we've had to have by having equally challenging, maybe not equally challenging, but quite challenging formation of groups like our first nursing home advisory board, where we had to try to put together a cross-section of skill sets to address extremely important issues with a failing nursing home at the time. Now, after a short period of time, all things considered, look at where we are. Likewise, when we formed the LRMP committee. What a job that is in this county, for all the reasons that we already know about. Well, likewise, this particular group, we are a almost split down the middle, Democrat and Republican, urban and rural county. So this is a terrific model from which to do this. So I'm going to be supporting this. I look forward to the use of some technologies, GIS, plugging in particular criteria that will get us, I think, a terrific starting point. So this group can take a look at some of the maps I've already seen drawn on 10 years ago data, which are pretty interesting starting points. So I'm going to be supporting this, and I encourage the rest of our membership to do so, with the idea that what we have here is a group of citizens that are interested in serving, and that there will be, in some cases, adversarial relationships that will be healthy in this particular case.
Mr. Langenheim.
Having read the dossier on all of these people, I must say that on the basis of what they wrote on their applications, it was really impossible to judge them in any effective way. And I want to thank Chairman Weibel for his interviewing of these people and for bringing in a set of names that doesn't include any of the screaming idiots that I would identify on the long list. I do not believe that this commission is going to have an easy time of it, and I wouldn't be at all surprised to see them hopelessly deadlocked. But be that as it may, here we are, and I'm going to vote for it.
Mr. James.
I just want to say that all those that applied, I applaud them for coming forward and trying to be part of the process. The proof will be in the pudding when the job is done and we'll all be quarterbacking it. But last but least, Pius, I want you to know I picked the very same seven you did.
I'm sure you did.
Mr. Rosales.
Well, I am of the opinion that the house has to be built. Whether we do it with the right hand or with the left hand, it doesn't matter who he selected. I am elated that it took 2 years, at least of me being on this board, to lobby and get the word out amongst my colleagues in this room, as well as the voters of Champaign County, to reduce the size of this board, get it to work together for the betterment of this community. You have to have a firm hand on that nail and a firm hand on that hammer, regardless of whether it's the right hand or the left hand. We are both here for the building of the house. When I think, I get excited to see that the house is going to be built. Whether I'm on this board or whether anybody else is on or off this board, I think we're going to be leaving a legacy behind that will be long-lasting and it will be memorable and it will be accounted to this board that made, that took the courage to put this on the agenda, to go ahead and vote for it, select the people that were going to go ahead and unbiasedly create something for the betterment of this community. So I will vote for it, regardless of whether I'm on, or regardless of there's more Dems or Democrats, or there's more diversity or liberal, as long as the right thoughts of doing the right thing by this county are concerned. You know, I, as a Democrat, I'm also concerned about the rural Republicans' municipalities, and I'm also a representative of those municipalities, and I will represent those municipalities. I'm not just because I'm a Democrat to forget about them and stick them in the back row. I hope that the next change should be that we should be sitting in alphabetical order, not according to districts. Thank you.
Mr. Jay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just very quickly, I was personally impressed when I read the applications of most of these people. There is some real talent in here. Now, of course, Pius didn't choose who I would, but he's allowed to make a mistake or two in his life, too. But one of the things that really stuck out, if you read those, everybody talked about fair and equitable. It didn't make any difference what their party affiliation was. Almost all of them, maybe not everyone, but most of them talked about fair and equitable. And if we can get that, that's what it's all about. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Nudo.
I want to congratulate Pius for doing a wonderful job on this. He had a short chat with him on Friday, and he really made the effort to look at all aspects of what the resolution called for. There are 11 different criteria, and he tried his damnedest to get all of those criteria as best he could. And I feel very strongly about, you know, when Steve and I drew this up with the help of a bipartisan group voting on this, we really want to take it out of the back room. Contrary to what I heard on a radio interview recently about to the winner go the spoils, I will never, ever go back to that as long as I'm on the board. This is groundbreaking. This is groundbreaking for our county, it's groundbreaking for the state, and it's groundbreaking for the nation if we can do this. I do want to, this is a 10-year project, as Jerry said. This is not just a 6-month project, this is a 10-year project. The voting cycles from now through the end of 2020 will be affected by this. And so we have to make sure that those 7 citizens and the 4 county board members, you know, look at it from a standpoint of what is right for the citizenry of county and not the party. I'm not naive to really believe that there won't be partisan politics involved. But I bring up to you one person on this group that I am concerned about, and I'm going to raise to the light of day, because when I spoke with Pius, he used the criteria of nobody above a precinct committee member on either party was considered. And I think that was a smart thing to do. But there are different levels of party activity that flow into a person's background that I am concerned about. And I bring up Esther Pat.
And I do that because I look at the record that she has had over her career, and it is highly partisan. I know that she supported on October 20th in the DI, Mr. Betts. That's her right to do that. She is active in partisan politics. I go back to an article in the DI, which at the time I brought up in the newspaper about how the wards were drawn up in Urbana politics. I'll just use one section of it. This is in the DI. A recent conflict during Satterthwaite's term involved Urbana City Council and the redistricting of Urbana's ward map. Satterthwaite said the map drawn by Alderwoman Esther Pat and approved by the City Council in May unfairly lumped Republicans in the 6th Ward. Additionally, the 6th Ward did not reflect geographic boundaries and was the ward with the highest growth, he said. I'm a Democrat, but I believe Democrats should win on the strength of their candidates, not the ability to create the map. This map violates one man, one vote. I'm concerned. And I want to bring this to the light today because I want to make sure that everybody in that group of 7 people understands what we're trying to achieve here. We've got 2 partisans in the county level that will slug it out. I don't have any problem with Richards and Kurtz, and I sure as hell am proud about Schrader and Benson. But I want to make sure that these people do their job without looking at party first.
Jan Anderson.
I'm not done. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
She was also the campaign manager for Laurel Pressing as late as a year ago for mayor. So what I want to point out now is that I want to be sure that everybody understands what we are doing here. And because Mr. Beckett wrote up that there will be open public meetings and that we have people that can attend this, I am going to make sure that we have a fair map drawing. Some people have brought up the trade-off of Rick Winkle versus Esther Pat. And I'm here to tell you, having spoken to Mr. Winkle when he was applying, that he is using this as a jumping point to take this across the state, to take this as a model of what we're trying to do. This is no trade-off. Mr. Winkle, when he left the state Senate, dropped out of politics. I spoke with Mr. Berkman today, the county chair. He has not contributed anything to the Republican Party. He has not supported any candidates in written form or any way, shape, or form. He would be a damn fool to do partisan politics when he is in the Department of Intergovernmental Affairs at the University of Illinois. This is not a trade-off. So I don't want to hear anybody say that this is a Winkle for Pat trade-off. It's just not true. So we'll be watching. I'm going to vote for this because it's the best thing that we have ever done, and I am proud of what we've achieved. But I want to make sure this is a fair process and that the citizens of Champaign County are the benefactors.
Dan.
Hadn't really planned to comment, but I had read all of the applications when we first received them, and then today I sat down and reread the ones that Jim Weibel picked, and I do thank him for all the time he spent in doing that. And I must say, other than the county board members, well, first, in looking at those, I didn't know any of them except Esther Pat and Rick Winkle. And I kind of analyzed where they lived. There were 2 from Rantoul, 1 from Sydney, and then counting our 2 county board members that live out in the rural area, we have 5 from the rural area out of 11, so that seemed like a fair balance. I was impressed with the, even though I didn't know the people, the backgrounds, their comments, because I think it will take someone who has some computer skills, does understand the census, understands the process, and it seemed a number of these people had good backgrounds for that. I have known Esther Pat probably since long before she was on the Urbana City Council. I really know Rick Winkle quite well. He lived across, directly across the street from me for about 14 years. Maybe he's not as active in the party now as he was then, but I think that might have been because of wanting the position at the university to indicate that Esther Pat is so political that Mr. Winkle isn't, I think is questionable. I think Ms. Pat has done a lot of community things other than her involvement in the Democratic Party with her work at, on the tenant union. She has the ability to have gone on to many other things, but she chooses to work in an area that really helps a lot of people, and she's done a lot of work in the community in volunteer kind of activities that benefit women and children. And I think she will take this very seriously, as I think Mr. Winkle will, and that they will balance each other out, and it will be interesting to see the process. And I intend to support Chairman Weibel's nominations.
Harold and Mr. Richards.
Although I do know some of the people on the board, and I do agree with most of those who have spoken, that they are certainly qualified. A couple of issues I do want to restate. It is important that there is fair across the board adequate representation. When you're talking about drawing a district, not only do you maybe lump all Republicans in one district, but you also lump all the poor in one district as well. And so there's no representation for people that don't make us under a certain amount of money. So when you start really breaking it down, you also have a class issue that's represented in almost every committee that's assigned from this board. And it's not just Mr. Weibel, but it was prior to him as well. So these committees and the structures of these committees go beyond party affiliation. I am, in my gut, do not believe that we will get out of partisan politics because we've appointed some other people. I believe that this is the responsibility of the county board, and we should do that based on what has been done prior in the history of drawing maps for all city governments or city-affiliated organizations. So I won't support it based on that principle. But the people that are on here, I would certainly hope, and I do believe, of course, a lot of them are already experience in this area, but again, it does not cover all the representation that needs to be represented, because most of the communities in the county that are left out are those that are poor. And I agree with Jan that if anything Ms. Pat has done, she has represented the least in Champaign County. So we certainly should consider that as close as we're going to get, in my opinion, of representing the poor in this community.
Michael Richards.
I also just wanted to follow up on Esther Pat. I think she's actually a little more three-dimensional than Mr. Nudo realizes. While she has been elected as a partisan Democrat, she is not, and to my knowledge, never has been elected as a Democratic precinct committeeman. And while we know Esther likes what she likes and dislikes what she dislikes, she is happy to tell anybody that multiple times over the last 20 years she's voted for Republicans.
Mr. Mosier?
Can we end the partisanship and vote?
Sir. I'm going to have the clerk call the roll.
Ammons?
No.
Anderson?
Yes.
Beckett?
Yes.
Benzel?
Yes.
Berkson?
Yes.
Betts?
Yes.
Dennett.
Yes.
Gladney.
Yes.
James.
Yes.
Jay.
Yes.
Jones.
Yes.
Knott.
Yes.
Kurtz.
Yes.
Langenheim.
Yes.
McGinty.
Yes.
Michaels.
Yes.
Mosier.
Yes.
Nudo.
Yes.
O'Connor.
Yes.
Richards.
Yes.
Rosales.
Yes.
Sapp.
Yes.
Schrader.
Yes.
Weibel.
Yes.
Wysocki.
Yes.
Motion carries. Now to the Nursing Home Board of Directors, Mr. Chairman.
I nominate Ms. Marianne O'Shaughnessy from December 1, 2010 to November 30, 2012.
Is there a second to that motion? Who's that? Mr. James? Discussion?
This might not be the right time, but we also have something on our green sheet for tonight. This is application from Robert Palenkas for Nursing Home County Board.
That's the addendum.
Oh, okay. Did anybody notice that he's from Danville?
Mr. Nudo.
It was discussed at the Nursing Home Board of Directors, and his employment is here in Champaign.
We are only on the O'Shaughnessy appointment. We'll come to that in the addendum, okay? Further discussion on the O'Shaughnessy appointment. I will disclose I've known her for 24 years, and she's campaigned with me, since that seems to be a disqualification for office. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the same. Motion carries. Public Aid Appeals Committee.
Are there two?
Those opposed, the O'Shaughnessy one?
No.
Roll call. This one. Number two.
Number two.
I'm sorry. The second one, Mr. Nudo.
Oh, I see. Okay. There's a second. I didn't realize that that's the same number.
Nudo's the one that's to talk.
We are the second appointee to the Nursing Board of Directors, Mr. Robert Palenkas, termed same as Ms. O'Shaughnessy.
Second by Ms. Anderson. Discussion. Mr. Nudo with the one that won first. Okay.
Pius. I'd like to point out he does not live in Champaign County, but according to the rules that we adopted for the Board of Directors, he can live outside the county as long as he's fully employed inside the county, which he is at the McKinley Health Center. I also want to point out that it is his application that you have a copy on your desk. There is a sentence missing. The third sentence says, this interest has expanded from my normal everyday responsibilities to include nursing activities. Due to recent time, my father has been in a local nursing home. And the next thing would be this board would enrich my understanding. I want to point out that his father is in a local nursing home, not the county board. But if anything, I think that's not a conflict of interest. That's a board. It's an advantage so you can see what's going on in other nursing homes.
Further discussion. Jan?
I guess I'd just comment that I think there was an attempt to find physicians, and I think Dr. Lansford really tried to explore that too, someone willing to serve, but we didn't get many applications flowing in for that category, so I think we've, with his background, I don't know him, but I think with his background, he should be an asset to the sport.
Further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the same.
Aye.
Motion carries. Public Aid Appeals Committee.
Two positions. I nominate Carol Elliott and James Rust to approve from December 1, 2010 to November 30, 2012.
Is there a second? Second by Ms. Wysocki. Discussion. Mr. James.
Well, it seems like Mr. Russ wants to start on December 1st, 2010, then he wants to quit November 30th, 2010. That's on his application. But I did call him, and he said he'd be willing to serve the full term if Pius would have him.
It's a time machine.
His application is
on. My nomination stands as is.
Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the same. Motion carries. Drainage District Number 2 of the Town of Scott.
Nominate Roger Armstrong from November 19, 2010 to August 31st, 2013.
Second by Mr. J. Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the same. Motion carries. The Nelson Moore Fairfield Drainage District.
I nominate Mr. John Heiser, term from September 1, 2010 to August 31st, 2013.
Seconded, was that Mr. Schrader? Seconded by Mr. Schrader. Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the same. Motion carries. County Administrator.
The vacant positions listing is with the agenda for your information. The only other thing that presenting to you this evening is a request for you to approve the calendar of meetings for 2011. It's probably easiest if you look at the color-coded document that you received. With your committee of the whole schedule, a couple of times you've noted that it would be a good idea to have study sessions, so we have built a study session into the last Tuesday of the month for most times. I would point out that in January we start the cycle 1 week later than normal because of the holidays that precede January 4th and the unlikelihood that there would be much of an agenda put together during that week. And then in there's another one. November, we start on the first Tuesday instead of the Tuesday following the first Monday to avoid Thanksgiving. And this schedule also in December shows the county board meeting following the normal schedule, but I would ask you to consider if you might not want to move that county board meeting to Tuesday, December 20th instead. The 22nd is the last day before a four-day weekend, so any action that the board approved at that meeting that evening would have to wait a fairly long time for any action. It might be better to have that meeting on December 20th. This goes along with the fact that we're closing out the fiscal year budgets at that point. You're doing final amendments for the previous fiscal year's budget, and it would leave the auditor with much less time to close all that out if we had a meeting on the 22nd. So that if you want to amend this calendar to change that, that would be the only other thing. We've avoided the April election day by moving the first committee of the whole to Thursday. And I think that's it.
Mr. Chairman?
I'd also like to point out that spring break for ULI is March 21st to the 25th, and we do have a county board meeting scheduled for that week. I guess if we wanted to avoid that, we could shift everything up by a week. Have the first community, the first community home meeting on Tuesday the 1st. How would that fit in, Deb? Is that possible, you think, logistically?
You could do that. You would just be eliminating the opportunity for a study session for the end of February, because the end of February is the 1st of March. Basically on a four-week cycle.
Well, I would move that we do move those meetings in March 1 week. Was it back or forward? I always get that confused. Up. And then and I would also recommend we do the other changes that Deb did and suggested, which I failed to memorize.
So you would move the December meeting to the 20th?
Correct.
Instead of the way it's listed?
Is there a main motion on the floor?
I don't think anybody's made a motion.
I think let's make a main. Were you going to make a main motion?
I'll move approval of the 2011 Champaign County Board meeting calendar since I won't be here.
Second!
And Ms. Waisaki seconded it. And now the amendments that Mr. Weibel made.
Which would be moving the meetings of March 1 week earlier, plus moving the December meeting from 22nd to 20th.
Is there a second on the amendments, or do you consider that friendly?
Friendly.
Friendly, Barbara?
Yes.
Okay, then announce.
And just as a clarification with that, we will take out one county board study session. There will not be one for the end of February.
Further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the same. Motion carries. County clerk request approval of liquor ordinance amendments.
Approval.
Mr. Beckett moved approval. Was that a second by Mr. James?
Yes, it was.
Seconded by Mr. James. Discussion, Mr. Weibel.
I move to split the question or divide the question.
Is there a second to that motion?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Langenheim.
There's no discussion, Mr. Brooks.
What exactly are you trying to do?
It divides into two parts.
Okay, which part?
Well, I can't discuss it because there's no discussion. That's what the rules say. But from a parliamentary viewpoint, you take one part, they've got a motion, or discuss, go on the floor, discuss that, then you have a second part. There is a reason behind my madness, but I can't discuss that because there's no discussion.
I move we suspend the rules so Mr. Weibel can discuss it.
All those in favor of suspending the rules so we can figure out what the motion is, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the same. Motion carries. Now can you tell us what you're trying to do?
If the motion was passed to divide it, I divide it into recognitions 1, 2, and 3 into one part and 4, and I guess 4 into the second part. One thing is that I'd Chautauqua, so it's the member compound number four, and their recommendation is different from Mr. Shell's recommendation, so I think that that should be deferred back to. It should be deferred until Mr. Sheldon and legal counsel agree on it. And I think that the other part, we can actually act on that.
Oh, it would
why
be.
Don't you just...
Well, I can just move to delete that, I suppose. But before that, amend the motion.
So what you want is a legal opinion on that section.
I would like to have a legal opinion on Mr. Sheldon and both the... Mr. Sheldon says the thing to me doesn't agree with the legal counsel's opinion, but I saw it. Perhaps I should start being new, and he should talk to them directly.
Recommendation four, is that what you're talking about?
Mm-hmm. The recommendation four is do not require fingerprints of certain corporate office and do not require them from day-to-day managers, and also changes the percentage. It's page 69, anything below recommendation 4.
What is the legal counsel's actual recommendation?
Well, one is that the all persons only controlling 5% or more interest.
Okay. And what else?
The other thing is logistically is if you take the fingerprints and send it to the Illinois State Police, they'll probably send it to the county board, back to the county board sheriffs. I'm not sure if that really does anything, but again, I think that's something that needs to be straightened out. That's not necessarily a legal opinion, but it sort of fits in there.
I guess the problem I'm having is if you have legal counsel and they're telling you one thing, Where's the basis in which we have, say,
well, I
disagree?
I've asked them to look into that. They could not prepare for this meeting, so...
There's some reason why we can't defer that.
That's what I was going to
ask. I'm thinking that, if Mr. Sheldon's okay with that, that's fine with me. That's how we could do part of it.
I don't think it's a question of whether Mr. Sheldon's okay with it or not. It's the procedure.
I'd rather vote on the whole thing at one time or not vote at all.
No, you won't be here.
I know. So I won't vote at all.
Mr. Nunn,
can I ask Mark to comment real quick if he doesn't mind on some?
The sheriff is not authorized to do background checks. So you can talk to the sheriff, but he's not going to do any background checks. I know it sounds odd, but he can't do background checks. State police does background checks. They charge for it. There's two different kinds. There's kinds with fingerprints, and there's kinds without fingerprints. I know way more about this than I want to know about it. We go through a lot of hassles trying to get all these stuff organized in terms of all the stuff that comes in. You know, we didn't do this until about 6 months ago. This was not our job. We volunteered to do this job because it involves saving county dollars. I really would love to just give this job back because we spent way too much time on this job and trying to manage the bureaucracy of this job. So this is an attempt to try to reduce that bureaucracy for the people who have liquor licenses, but most especially for my office, because it doesn't serve us to go around and try to chase down fingerprints for some corporate board member of Casey's who lives in California. That just doesn't serve any purpose, and the city of Urbana doesn't require that, and the city of Champaign doesn't require it, and if you want me to come back next month and tell you all the other people in the state of Illinois who don't require such things, we can do that. But our liquor ordinance and what we require is far more than what is usually or generally out there required. So that's my purpose there. I'm not hung up on the 25% of the stock. I just threw a number in there. That's not a big deal. We right now are asking for fingerprints for managers. However, the liquor ordinance doesn't require that. We just have done that. We, ironically, have not been asking for the background check for those corporate board members. So one of the reasons why this is coming up now is we just took it over. The first thing we did when we took it over is we read the liquor ordinance. The liquor ordinance requires that. Unfortunately, the people who have already received these licenses for the last few years haven't been going through that background check. So what I'm trying to do is make the liquor ordinance comport with what past practice has been. So if past practice has been a problem, then maybe we got a deeper problem than changing this, because if we were doing something that wasn't right before, then I suppose we need to figure out how to rectify that. My opinion is, reading the law, that we have the right to require these kinds of background checks, but we certainly do not have a requirement to do that. So if you want to put it off, I guess I would be fine with that. I just, for us, this is trying to make our job a little bit easier. I think it also makes the job of the liquor license owners a little bit easier, and there's nothing wrong with that. I don't think that it imperils public safety in any way. But like I said, my number one concern is the amount of time my staff has to spend on this, and cleaning up a few of these things would certainly help us get these things moved through a little bit quicker without handling things too many times. Every time you've got open files, they have to be reviewed and continually checked on to see if somebody got a background check and that type of thing. It just takes longer. So that's our reasoning. The sheriff, you can talk to him, but he's not going to do background checks. He can't do background checks. It's unfortunate. It sounds strange, but it's true. He can do the same background check that you and I can do, which is that he can go to the website of the circuit clerk and find out if somebody did something bad. And he can go to the website of the Franklin County clerk and find out if they got caught in a speed trap. And he can go to the website of some other county or circuit clerk somewhere. But he can't do anything more than you and I can do in a public record search.
Before we have a long-term conversation about this, it seems to me that we need to hear from legal counsel what their reason is. This does not seem to be urgent, according to Mark. It seems to me that we would be better off having a motion to defer this to next month, get the legal counsel's rationale, and deal with this as one whole package rather than dividing it into all the little sections. Mr. Weibel.
I move to...
First, you need to withdraw.
I'd like to withdraw my motion to divide.
Okay. The seconder, you withdraw.
And I move to defer to next month.
Is there a second to defer? Okay. We can now discuss the motion to defer, not the merits of the argument, just motion to defer. Jan.
Mine was a question about the time. The applicants, they reapply at the beginning of the year. Is that right?
Well, it's kind of interesting. I had to review. It's either the licenses, I think they take effect July 1st. Mm-hmm. So
we have plenty of time.
Again.
Other than the fact that these things do come in on a regular basis.
The discussion is the merits of deferral. Merits of deferral. Carol.
I just wonder if the deferment is going to do anything in particular, because even if we do background checks and it doesn't prevent a person from getting a license, I don't even know what the point is. I would see more than deferring it if we won't do anything with the information anyway.
The question is, what is the legal counsel has apparently a disagreement, and I think we need to know the basis on which they are saying we should do one thing and not the other before we take any action, since time is not of the essence. Getting a legal opinion doesn't hurt. The motion on the floor is to defer this preferably to next month and get a legal opinion on it. All those in favor of the motion to defer?
Aye.
Those opposed, the same? The motion carries. Thank you, Mark. Board of Review report. I would entertain a motion to receive it and place it on file. Moved by Carol, seconded by Richards. Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the same. Motion carries. Chair's report. The chair doesn't have a report. Barb, you had a fun look on your face. Did I skip something? Okay. Designation of items to be placed on county board consent agenda. Oh, I think we have some of the all the appointments that went through that were unanimous.
Except for
except in
B2.
Right.
B2.
Okay.
Mr. Butts, was there any, the Board of Review report, was any, did Mr. Williams want to say anything about that? He had talked earlier.
We've already received that. If he wishes to address the board, he certainly can. With the discretion of the board, I think we've already acted on it.
Okay. Our thing is, could we have a break? Or should just leave in mass?
Do people want a 5-minute break?
No, no, no. Let's go through it.
I want to get out of here early. Come on.
Why don't you take a break? We're going to keep going. Thank you. And Brendan is going to be doing the finance report, and I want to thank Brendan for at least 3 terms of service. When I started on the board, we would fight until midnight to get budgets through, and I know in the past few years we've actually been able to get budgets through on a consent agenda, and I give Brendan and the county administrator and folks a lot of credit for that. So I want to thank Brendan for his long service as chair of budget. Thank you, Brendan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess that means I'm retiring.
No, it means we're thanking you.
And I will remind everyone that liquor, which we just discussed, is one of the 3 A's under alcohol. Always controversial. Okay, we have a lot of action items on finance, so on your mark. First two. Yes.
Would you possibly consider taking the public defender's issue first, since he's been sitting here all night?
Is that agreeable? We'll take the public defender's issue first, because he's been sitting here for quite some time, and that is the public defender's request to waive hiring freeze for assistant public defender position. It's under B1 on 78. Motion by Steve, seconded by Michael. Is there discussion on that issue? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? That motion carries.
Thanks, Randy.
Thank you, Randy. Now, under amendments and transfers, I'd like to take number 1 and 2 first. They are for the recorder. They're both revenue positive. 100,000,091 to cover increased revenue due to large sales in the campus area, and 100,092 for $35,000 in appropriations, $38,500 in revenue to cover monies used to purchase additional document stamps. Is there a motion for approval by Carol, seconded by Al? Is there discussion? Barbara.
Does purchasing additional document stamps, does that mean home sales are up?
It means real estate transactions are up. It's not necessarily home sales.
Okay.
Any other questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? That motion carries. Number 3 is an amendment 100,093, increased appropriation of $8,811 of revenue of $650. The original budget did not allow for the planned expenditures for a course unfunded program. Investment interest will offset a small portion of the balance of allocations. Is there a motion for approval? By Jan, seconded by Carol. Any discussion on this item? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Number 4 is an amendment 100,090 for $14,150. This is pursuant to bids received. The total expenditure for the ILEAS roof replacement increased over preliminary estimates. Is there a motion for approval? By Stan. Is there a second? By Al. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Number 5 is an amendment 100,089 for $10,922. This ERA payment for fiscal year 2010 for animal control. Is there a motion for approval? By Barbara. Is there a second? By Stan. Discussion.
What's the ERA?
Brad? Brad, first.
Go ahead, Deb.
It is the early retirement incentive debt that we are paying from when we offered it in 2003. Animal Control had an individual, so they have an annual debt obligation to pay, and failed to budget for it in this year's budget. We don't pay it until now, so that's why you're getting the amendment at this point.
Thank you. I thought it stand for ear and rear instrument, but thank you.
Brad,
how do they fail to budget for it is what I don't understand.
It was a mistake. Honestly, I missed it when she prepared the budget. And Ms. Yost, who is the animal control director, prepares the budget for animal control and simply just missed budgeting that line item.
How much longer do we pay the ERI?
It will be paid off in 2013.
Thank you.
Michael, nothing? Anybody else? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. Next up is the amendment 100094, also for Animal Control 2600 budget amendment to cover IMRF. Is there a motion for approval? By Steve Mosier. Is there a second? By Jan. Is there a discussion on this? Michael.
I do have a question on this. Is this related to X8 with the IMRF employer contribution rate raising? Is this the same thing here?
Yes, you're just seeing these filter in from the various funds as they get to the point where they know exactly how much they're going to need to carry this through the rest of this year. It is all a result of the fact that we changed the rate mid-year.
You got it, Diane? Okay. Anything else on this? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. We'll go over to the addendum, and it is item number 7, an amendment 100095 for $65,000, payment for remaining fiscal year 2010 general corporate work comp payroll premiums. Motion by Brad for approval, second by Carol. Is there discussion on this? Diane.
No. Sorry.
Easy on the microphone.
Sorry. Okay. I understand that the other was part of an increase. Is that what this is also? But this says tort immunity tax fund. I thought we were caught up with everything on IMRF.
This is not IMRF. This is workers' compensation.
Oh, my fault. I'm on the wrong line.
Number 7 on the addendum. Anything else on this one?
Sorry.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Item number 8 is a transfer, 100010 for 1,050. This transfer will cover additional IMRF costs, which were incurred during an increase in the IMRF employer contributions rate from 8.48% to 9.92%. Motion by who was Steve Beckett, second by Steve Mosier. Discussion. Did you say, oh, John Jay made the motion. Sorry, you guys sound so much alike, John and then Steve.
We are confused a lot.
I do confuse you a lot. Is there discussion on this issue? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? That motion carries. We have covered the public defender issue. Now we're on to state's attorney request for approval of application for and if awarded acceptance of fiscal year 2011 victim advocacy grant renewal. Is there a motion for approval by Brad, second by Michael? Discussion.
Just one question. Have we normally shut down request to apply and approve the same motion?
Yes, your grant policy, which okay. I don't remember the ordinance number, actually sets out that is how you deal with grants, okay. So that we don't have to bring these back.
I think that's a great idea. It's good that we're following more closely.
Anything else on this issue? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Nursing home request approval of application for and, if awarded, acceptance of fiscal year 2011 IDOT grant. Is there a motion for approval?
So moved.
By Stan, seconded by John. Discussion. Michael.
I know we've had applications like this in the past. Have we not gotten them before?
Yes, we have.
We have.
Our fleet of buses at the nursing home is basically all provided by these types of grants.
Okay.
Any other questions or discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. The county administrator's report. Deb.
The first item is the General Corporate Fund 2010 projection report. It's with the green packet that you received at your desks tonight. It's on page 9. It starts on page 9. This report is substantially the same as it was last month, a little bit better. I'll point out what's changed in revenue. We received a distribution from Urbana of $118,299. This was a distribution from the 2002-2003 property tax appeal with Provena, and they released that money to us. I would consider this at this point to be one-time revenue, and it should go and remain in the general corporate fund balance, but it does improve the overall performance for fiscal year 2010, so that looks like currently we'll only see a shortfall of about $630,000 over budgeted revenue. On the expenditure side, it also is improving by about $100,000 in terms of expenses that we anticipate. So we anticipate coming in at about $624 under budget, which brings us to an ending position of positive $869,348 for fiscal year 2010, which would mean that we would end the year with a 9% fund balance if you don't consider the loan to the nursing home, 7.7% if you subtract out the loan to the nursing home, which is fairly good news. And we'll know for sure in January.
Any questions for Deb?
There is no budget change report because it hasn't changed in terms of the budget for general corporate. The Harrison Harris report, which is number 3, just to know, so you know the impact of this project. On page 12 at the bottom, you'll see that year-to-date general corporate fund has benefited by collections of $169,323 as a result of the Harrison Harris collections project. And total for all agencies who have seen revenues from these collections, on page 17, the total collected year-to-date is $798,739, basically, which is a good thing. However, we're still under budget on our revenue for general government fees. A lot of that is more related to real estate transaction fees, though.
Questions for Deb on the Harrison Harris? Accept a motion to place all three reports on file by Carol. Is there a second? By Brad. Any discussion on those reports? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
The next item is a request for approval of the resolution authorizing the renewal of the loan from the general corporate fund to the nursing home fund in the amount of $333,142.
Is there a motion for approval by Steve Beckett? Is there a second? By Stan James. Discussion. Stan?
How long has this loan been on the books, Deb? 3 years?
3 years.
Yeah.
Any other questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
Next is a request approval of the authorization for a loan to the general corporate fund from the public safety sales tax fund in the amount of $1,657,573.
Motion for approval?
So moved.
By Ralph. Seconded by Barbara. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
Next is a resolution to approve a fiscal year 2011 plan for the use of general corporate fund one-time revenues. You did a similar resolution last year. It is simply to acknowledge that our fund balance should be 12.5% or nearly $4 million. So if we are $1.8 million short, the first $1.8 million in one-time revenues shall be deposited in the general corporate fund to restore the fund balance. Second, if we happen to have $2 million in one-time revenues, the next $200,000 would go to the Tort Immunity Fund to cover the shortfall in revenue to expenditure in that fund for fiscal 2011, and anything over that would be deposited into the Capital Asset Replacement Fund.
Is there a motion for approval by Alan, seconded by Steve Beckett? We've all discussed this before. Are there any questions? Alan?
What do you anticipate being one-time revenue gains this next year, besides Harrison Harris?
Harrison Harris, I do not consider. We do not consider them one-time revenues because that program is supposed to be at least 3 years, so they're built into the operating budget for a three-year period. The money we just received from Urbana, the $118,000 for the property tax, that is one-time revenue. I asked last month, and I think I got your concurrence, that we will treat the 2013 payment from ILEAS for their rent in the amount of $416,000 as one-time revenue. It is not included in the 2011 budget. as revenue, and I expect we probably will not receive it until December, which means it will go towards the 2011 budget. But if we received it in 2010, I would still say it should be considered one-time revenue. I would say whatever excess of revenue is to expenditure for 2010 should be considered one-time revenue and left in the general corporate fund balance.
Any other questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
The next is the approval of the fiscal 2011 annual tax levy ordinance.
Is there a motion for approval? By Barbara, seconded by Carol. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
The next is the approval of the fiscal year 2011 annual budget and appropriation ordinance.
Motion for approval.
So moved.
By Stan, is there a second? By Ron. All in favor? Discussion?
I would like to point one thing out. There has been one change of $36,078 since it was presented to you when you placed it on file in additional revenue and expenditure. It's not in the general corporate fund. It's in the developmental disabilities fund. But just so you know, the totals will be different in what is ultimately published than what was originally presented to you in October.
Barbara?
I realize the hour is getting late on this budget issue, but based on what we heard this evening, is there a chance we can find $12,000 for the self-help center at the courthouse?
If I could speak to the law library budget, that budget is spent at the discretion of the presiding judge, so the county board does not have discretion over how those funds are spent. When the self-help desk project was initiated, I don't think that the judges ever committed to forever funding it. I think they thought they would be funding it for a period of a year or two to get it off the ground. The law library fund has been deficit spending for the last 2 years, and they're trying to pull it back to balanced budget spending, and that's part of the reason for not continuing this $12,000 expenditure. That fund balance will come down nearly $50,000 this year, and that is because they did do some additional reimbursement for general corporate type expenses for Westlaw for the court-related offices to help out with the county's budget deficit. They are pulling back on that as well next year. So the only, I would say that the law library is not a source for continuing to pay for this project. It's certainly, you would be telling the presiding judge to deficit spend on a fund in which he's trying to keep in balance at this point in time, and you ultimately don't make the decision about how that fund is spent. If the county board wants to fund that program, you right now have a budget for the general corporate fund which is balanced, and it would take it to not balanced if you chose to expend additional dollars, but obviously that is your choice. It's a $30,920,984 budget.
Is it possible that this could be funded from outside sources?
I don't see why not, and I think that's a question for Land of Lincoln, because they're operating this program. I mean, if you provide the space...
Yeah.
Have they looked into charging for the service, even if it's only $5 per customer? I think at one point Mr. Kurtz noted that someone said that that's all that it costs. So...
But we would have to approach Lincoln Land.
Well, they're providing the service, I guess. I couldn't they just come up with a plan for charging for the service if they want to keep it?
Carol, the now.
I guess I was going to just ask about the revenue that was left from the building of the court.
That money is committed to through bonds. That money is you have that money because it's the result of a bond issue, and it either has to be used for construction related to the courthouse or to repay the bonds.
Al?
I talked this evening with the public defender concerning this program, and he feels that there's a possibility of us being able to save it. we wanted to go into discussions with the judge, DePonis, as well as state's attorney, see if we can find the $12,000. If not, I still feel that we can put forward a charge on each individual of $5 or $6 to cover the cost of the $12,000. I don't think we need to lose this program. I think it's a very efficient and well-run program that can help those who need the help in the confusing court system at times.
Stan?
Well, I hear what Al's saying, but, you know, that's one of the things that I would hope would be discussed with the full board so that we're all on the same page. I think that's what we're all about. We're supposed to be representing everybody because I hear that word tossed around a lot. But when I hear everybody else making deals, it makes me sort of feel like, well, where am I in this, you know? So when you have something like that, I think the appropriate person to go to in my mind, and someone can correct me, and I'm sure somebody will, but Pius Weibel is the chairperson, so that should be ran through him, or each one of us should, before we take it upon ourselves. It's unfair to the rest of us that we're in the dark. Thank you.
I'll go back to Al for rebuttal, then Michael.
Thank you. This was just a two-minute conversation here this evening. I certainly wasn't going to usurp your authority or the board's authority. I just felt that I took the initiative to see if we could get a response from the public defender in a quick conversation, and he feels that there is a possibility. So I will then, of course, go through proper channels.
Okay, Michael.
Just like I say, I think we should look into, and I'm going to look into, either full board or next month, amending Resolution 7505 for the one-time revenues, and see if we can maybe put $12,000 of that, if necessary, in a month, if we still haven't figured out a use into the library. If we found something else, some other way to pay it, then fine. But I think that's something we should look into, and I'm gonna look into that.
Anything else on this agenda item? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries.
Next item is a resolution reallocating recovery zone facility bond allocation to the Illinois Finance Authority.
Is there a motion for approval?
So moved.
By Stan, seconded by Barbara. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries.
An ordinance authorizing the issuance of general obligation limited debt tax certificates series 2010A to finance the county facilities for the county of Champaign, Illinois, and providing the details of such certificates and related matters. It is with the Lavender attachment, and this is effectively the bond issue for the $1.9 million for the facility.
Is there a motion for approval?
Moved.
By Steve Beckett. Is there a second? Larry, discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries.
The next is the approval of an installment purchase agreement for those Series 2010A bonds, which will enable these debt certificates to be sold in $5,000 increments, which is a better way for us to set up this bond issue.
There's a motion by Steve Beckett to move approval, and seconded by Barbara. Discussion.
Do they sell any locally? Mm-hmm. Are they going to sell any of the bonds locally?
I think they'll make them available, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, the question was, are they going to sell any of the bonds locally? Deb said, I think they'll make them available. Any other discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Finally, the ordinance of the County of Champaign, Illinois, providing for the issuance of general obligation refunding bonds series 2010B, providing the details of such bonds and for a levy of taxes to pay the principal and interest on such bonds and related matters. This is the refunding of the 2003 nursing home bonds, which will generate savings and interest for us to the tune of about $300,000.
Is there a motion for approval by Steve Beckett? Is there a second by Al? Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries.
And finally, requesting approval of the authorization for the issuance of tax anticipation warrants for the Champaign County Nursing Home.
Is there a motion for approval by Brad? Is there a second by Barbara? Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Is that it, Deb? Thank you very much. Next up, Dan, you've been a very patient man. We appreciate it. It's endlessly interesting.
You're a masochist.
I'll be quick. I want to give you kind of a final report on real estate taxes. We start the year with about 74,000 bills going out. $270 million going to be collected, and we ended that process on October the 29th with our annual tax sale. Last day for collections was October 28th, the day before, and we were at 99% collected at the end of that day. So 1% of the total dollars is actually what went to the tax sale. 1,032 parcels of real estate actually went. We sell taxes, not property, and that's a little bit less. 39 properties less than there were the previous year. We had 21 tax bidders in this room, and the average bid for those 1,032 parcels was 4.99. Could be as high as 18, could be as low as zero. If you read the Southern Illinois newspapers, you'll read about Madison County, who over a three-year stretch of a very big county, their average rate was 18%, and the county treasurer in that particular county also accepted $140,000 in campaign contributions from tax buyers. I can assure you I did not do that. So anyway, of $270-some million, we did collect $156,000. Now, what is that $156,000? About $100,000 is bankruptcy. About $10,000 are leaseholds, which we could have still end up getting back. And about $30,000 of actual taxes that were offered for sale and no tax purchaser asked or bid on those. So 99.94 was the actual ending percentage. It was the highest on record that I can ever find, 99.94 out of all taxes that were sent out. Bills back in May. So that's the end of real estate. I did want to mention that we did pay back two loans this month, $500,000, $300,000 to the Recorder's Automation Fund and $200,000 to Probation Services that had been loaned to General Corp. There's part of my report that shows loans. That's the October report. We did that in early November. General Corp would fund cash flow. Last year we ended at $3.5 million. In actual cash at the end of November this year, my projections show about $4.3 million. So certainly headed in the right direction, but we're not done yet. And finally, Al made a mention about the $118,000 we got from Provena through Earth City Urbana. If you remember, it's been a long saga. We started this back in 2003. When we got the money back from Provena after the Supreme Court ruling, we got $8.8 million. And almost 99% of that goes to the City of Urbana in one TIF district. The City of Urbana has agreed very generously to distribute it to the taxing districts, us being one of those. So the first year was 2002, the Supreme Court decided. So we had $118,000 off that. There's another about $600,000 we have potential to get. Today, my attorney, who was appointed to my office from the state's attorney's office because they couldn't represent me during this case, filed legal papers with the court asking for a declarative judgment on all those other years. Let's just force Provena to tell us what the heck they're going to do. Because what they're saying to us is that, okay, the Supreme Court's ruled on all these years, but we still believe we've got an opportunity to get this back so don't spend any of it. So that's the dilemma Urbana's found themselves in. And I'm trying to get the court to make a decision for these folks that we can, that Urbana can spend this money and give us a nice present here in the next, who knows how long it'll take. So anyway, one other thing about Provena, they filed on the 2006 taxes for exempt status, and that was heard before the administrative law judge in end of October. So in about 7 years, we'll find out what that's going to end up with. So it's been a fun evening to be with you. If there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer you. If not, I'd ask that my report be accepted and placed on file, please. Motion by Geraldo, second by Allen. Are there any questions for Dan?
Thank you.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thanks very much, Dan. I don't believe the auditor is here. That you do have the purchase not following purchasing policy. One item on handed to you. Is there a motion to accept and place on file that report that by Pius?
No, not that report. Just the monthly report.
I'm sorry, the monthly report is what I meant. Okay. Thank you. By Pius. Is there a second? By Geraldo. To discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Is there any other business for finance? There is no chair's report. The items for consent are A1 through 8, B1, C1, D1, E4 through 9, and 12. Is there any other business? Then we are in recess. Thank you very much.